We're on.
Okay, well, let's call to order the regular meeting and public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, July 9th, 2015. First order of business is to approve the minutes for June 25th, 2015. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Motion by Jim, second by Curtis. Any changes, amendments, or corrections? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. So if you're willing to or wanting to speak on something that we're going to be discussing later on in the public hearing, please hold those comments. This is specifically for anything else that is not related to tonight's agenda. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to just speak on a non-agenda item? Hearing none. The next item on our agenda is the public hearing for the economic development element. Before we get into that, I guess, would you guys, staff will give us a brief introduction. The public can comment during the public comment period for a time of up to 3 minutes. Do I have a volunteer on the commission that can help time that? Curtis? That would be great. And I have a time on it if you want.
Yeah.
After we close the public hearing, the Planning Commission will deliberate, we'll discuss it, we'll make any other additional changes, and whether or not we recommend it tonight or not is up to how many changes we have, or if we have none, there's a possible recommendation, right? During that time when we deliberate, though, the public can no longer comment, so during your period, I ask that you commit all your comments to us. Do you want to give a brief introduction before I open the public hearing?
Sure, I can do that, because there is additional information from last week, the last time I met. Okay, so the packet includes the version that you saw at our last meeting, which includes the work that the EDC has done to date. We also received a very detailed and good written comment and version from Commissioner Ryan. And so what I thought we'd do today after we hear from the public is, since we're kind of looking at two different versions of somewhat similar but different wording, what would be really nice is to get your feedback on either aspects of which one you like, what elements, and what we'll end up doing is probably bringing it back as one document for you to deliberate on and make a recommendation on that once we've kind of figured out what parts of each we want to blend or how we want to bring them both together. So without getting into the details, because I know you guys have read the packet, we can go right to the public hearing.
So at this point, I'm going to open the public hearing at, looks like, 7:06. So any member of the public wishing to speak to us about the economic development element? Seeing none, I will go ahead and close the public hearing at 7:06.
And 35 seconds.
And we'll move forward to the Planning Commission deliberation. So as Jenna asked, I'll entertain some thoughts from the commission. Do you want to run through one version and have comments submitted on pages, or do you want to look at Dick's version and just go through that one? How would you best like to proceed?
I think what pops to my mind, and it's something that Commissioner Ryan pointed out, is the tonality of it, and it seemed that, if I understood your perspective on it, was that perhaps we're not addressing this chapter with as much oomph as we should, and we should make it a little bit more to the point and directed and definitely have that spirit behind it. So to me, I see that as one element. Then getting into the actual verbiage is a whole other element, because there's some back and forth on that. So I don't know if we go through one and then go through the other, if that's an optimal use of time, although it could be. But for me, I think maybe we talk about the spirit of the document first, settle on that, and then just digress into back and forth on that. I'm just just throwing that out there.
That would be actually helpful. I think if you guys can come to kind of some general direction tonight, what I think would be the most helpful is then to merge the document based on the input you guys give us, and then we start the page by page and the wordsmithing at our next meeting. So, you know, Dick had a lot of great things. I got the EDC who's put a lot of good work into it too, and I think give us some feedback, we can blend them real well.
And to expand on that, I mean, if we need to get, the way I would see it unfolding is if we need to get any sort of details, perhaps it would be in more in the goals section, because those are a little bit more quick and to the point, and we can get those settled up for staff, whereas the overall narrative, you know, is something that we can come back to later.
Actually, that's a good point, especially based on the fact that, from what I'm hearing, you guys really want to put some strength into action, and that's where it starts, is with our goals.
Yeah.
That would be a good place to give us great feedback.
Okay. The one other thing you talked about, Brendan, was kind of getting the driver behind it and putting some more oomph. Yeah. So do you want to do that in the goals and policies, or are you talking about in other things?
I would actually look at it as different. I'd like to hear the voiceover, though, live from Commissioner Ryan first on the motivation behind it and kind of get everybody on board on that. But looking at the goals specifically, once we agree to the, hey, we need to have that oomph, are we really addressing that oomph in the goals and so forth, right?
Okay.
Maybe more of a working backwards with the with the live document itself, but having that overview as we do that. Does that make sense?
That does.
Okay.
So then, 1, 2, 3, I think it's the start of the goals and the objectives, like page 6 on the original one.
Well, would you mind if Commissioner Ryan spoke a little bit to this point in the email?
Sure.
Would that be okay to have that as a discussion?
Absolutely.
Because I'm assuming people may agree or disagree. I really don't know the consensus of the board. I personally saw some agreement on my end.
I'd be happy to. It'll take a lot of time. I'm just going to try to get my point. Last time, I was strongly opinionated on the version that came from staff, and as I began really putting my mind into it, I came around to actually beginning to understand staff's written goals and policies. But I found that I got to that point because I really came to the point that what we really are missing in this kind of a document, when we have goals and policies, there's no follow-through indicated in the plan. We're not taking the plan to a point where we can actually do something with it. We set goals for ourselves, we set policies to meet those goals, but we don't have any follow-through to make sure these goals are being attained. We're hoping they'll be attained. We're expecting that because we're saying that we want this, that the public will react to it. On the other hand, I think that it's up to us who make this a working document, a living document. It's up to us to make it move forward. It's up to the commission and the staff to be proactive with the goals, to actually set goals for themselves to attain over a very specific time frame. And that's the way it's done in most forms I've been involved with in a corporate sense. Set goals, you attain them, you move forward. It doesn't seem to be that clearly described in this plan. Maybe that's the way it works internally, but if that's the way it works, I don't see a lot of our goals. This has been the same goals we've had for the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Close?
They're pretty different. This is a total rewrite of the chapter, but
okay.
We try to simplify and come up with 5 good, strong ones.
And I'm corrected on that score, but I do believe that when I don't see the document, it's any indication that we're going to work our way towards success in this. It gives us the freedom to work towards it, but we don't have any accountability to actually achieve it. And so I spent time in the front end of this narrative to talk about working on setting goals and actually achieving goals. And I And I did presume staff doesn't have this, but I wanted to make it clear to the public that we actually worked in this way. So the public can expect to see if we have these five goals, we're actually working on doing something with them, not just putting them in print. So that's what I did on the front end. I began to realize, and I did add some language changes to put some punch into it. Everybody felt like we needed our community to understand. We know who you are. We know that the people in North Bend are hard workers. They know how things work. That we don't take them for granted. And this document is intended to improve our condition in our town. And we need to say that more than once. It can't be just hope that they understand we know these things. We have to actually say it and then work in that direction. So that was what I spent a lot of time on the front end, the first three or four pages. I hope I succeeded there. And then I may have emphasized certain policies within the goal sets differently, but I began to realize that the language wasn't dysfunctional. If anything's dysfunctional, but it's not clear is we're actually going to work towards making the schools work. And that's when I was trying to get my point across as I was doing this. So I kind of came to closure on the fact that while I was critical of the individual policy language, whatever, I began to embrace it with the expectation that we're all going to work proactively to make these goals. So that's what's behind what I did here. And the exercise that I did, I came to another new appreciation about the work that our staff does. That was important for me to actually finally come to that conclusion. I've dealt with this kind of stuff for almost 30 years of my career, so I know what goes into it. But I'm kind of taking the North Bend staff a little bit for granted lately, and I shouldn't be doing that. But I don't have a hair trigger, but I do get kind of exercised on things. I demonstrated that last time. I think I apologize for being a little bit two-pointed in my language, so I apologize.
I like your hair trigger.
Come again?
I like your hair trigger.
Oh, you know.
Lay it out there.
Okay. So that's what I've done. And I'm just trying to say to my colleagues here that you do not disrespect the staff. They don't tell me that. I have a feeling that I did. I didn't mean to do that. But I do think that this was a time in the comp plan to get a little bit emotional, a little bit forward-leaning, and with the expectation that everybody at the table, city council, city staff, and commissioners on the various boards begin to lean forward. This town is going to grow. We need to make sure it grows in the way we want it to, and in a timely way. And so one of the things I did is that I emphasized the fact that we need to create a full FTE for our director of tourism. We're going to talk tourism. We understand it's a huge opportunity for us. We need to have Buddy on board full time pushing that agenda. I'd like to see that. I stopped short of recommending that we have another director on staff that's going to be pulling in the manufacturing groups that we'd like to see here. I still think staff has the capability of doing that if they add emphasis to it. But I think we have a unique opportunity on the tourism side. We already have a part-time person in the visitor's office that could become a tourist host as well. I don't know if Pamela's up to that, but I think that would be an overlapping job that could prevail in that office. So that's what I've added. That's new to the plan, is adding another employee in our staff. Not a Chamber of Commerce, hope they can get the job done thing, but actually proactively out there pushing for tourism. And that's about what I've done in here.
So I appreciate all your comments, your hard work, and your feedback, because I, like others, found a lot that I like about it. I also have some areas that I might not agree with. So for that purpose, either we need to go through your version or the current one at some point with just that specificity of going through what you have changed versus what's in the original document. Everything that you outlined, for instance, in the first paragraph of the introduction and purpose of the current document talks about the sustainability and the long-term growth of our city. And I think that punch is something that I want in that first paragraph, which isn't in your document. So maybe, you know, we have to find a way to fit it in so that way we have that color. Having said that, if we want to take a look at the goals and policies, and then we can come back to the text. Sure.
I think that we do need the goals and policies, but I think that what we're dealing with now with these two documents is a concept versus execution. And we're talking about a static document versus a living document. So as we're considering looking at this and considering it, to have everybody have in the back of their mind, who is our audience for this document? What is the purpose of this document? And can we be, instead of referring to two separate documents that are living, that are more, that are easily changed. And I think that it was actually good timing that we were reading the capital facilities at the same time, because it does use that, where it frequently refers to what I would describe as living documents that are continually being changed. I saw a lot of great stuff. And I really commend you, the passion kind of is a wake-up call for us to revisit this and say, hey, we've got the residential going. How do we make sure that the economic development in our city matches what we want, that it's in fact bringing that in? And I have some ideas on that full-time equivalent and that we can talk about. But as we're looking at this, it's more of a concept issue. And then we can deal with the wordsmithing later and how we're going to lay it out. But what is it we're really trying to say, and who are we talking to with this document as we go forward? Because if we're going to rewrite it, let's do it right, since we don't need to really change it for a little while.
And I guess, you know, I read through Dick's version, and I really enjoyed, I really thought it added a lot of value to the EDC's work. And then listening to you speak just now, I think we can actually circle back to a couple key principles that I think are critical. We want strong, action-oriented goals. And your policies are the items that, just like in normal goal setting, you set a goal and you got to put together, now how do you attain that goal? You know, and there's action items below that. That's your policies. I like the fact that Dick put time frames on stuff. You can't accomplish anything if you don't set the goal and have a deadline for yourself. You know, that one of the things that we worked on in downtown for 8 years was a downtown plaza and our civic center, and these things have been lagging. And I think in your economic development chapter, which has said, hey, downtown revitalization is our number one priority, if that's your number one priority, we need to go back to these principles and goals and say, hey, when we have an opportunity, we go after it and we make it happen. So I think what I took from Dick's version, and how if I was to go and do the work to blend them, I would strengthen the time frames and the action, put some oomph into that. Maybe, you know, there's some language, like one question I have for you guys is, Dick's version talks about industrial and manufacturing being our hub of economic growth out at Trucktown. And, you know, I asked myself, the reason why we didn't use those terms in the previous document is there's a lot of opportunity out there, from high tech to med tech to clean tech to green tech. I mean, and we have right now blank slate. So when it comes to right now, like for example, REI announced they're looking for a new place to put their corporate office. We contacted them immediately and said, hey, we've got a perfect place you can, your employees can live and work in the environment they dream of. So that would be the, you know, but that's not manufacturing. So that's where, I mean, when I was thinking about input from you guys, I think manufacturing is one element of economic development and living wage jobs that we want to attract. So some of those terms, I kind of would like to get your input, but from what I hear, let's make it action-oriented. Let's make it specific to time frames. I do think you're right. We need to be cognizant that we can't change this document more than once a year, and realistically, we probably will change it, update it probably every 3 years. So we want to keep that in mind. But, like you said, there are a lot of similarities between the old document and this, because the reality is revitalization of our downtowns is necessary, and job growth is necessary. And those two principles are going to stand strong until we, probably the next 15, 20 years.
So hearing you say that, I also think about our timeline in which we have to get this all done.
Yeah.
Which is kind of out the window.
Kind of.
Well, timeline to get the document done or to get the comp plan done?
Well, we're past it, but we need to get it as soon as possible.
Well, but on that note, I think if we do this merging, really focus on being action-oriented, setting proper goals, and so forth, we can strip away a lot of the narrative, because I had the same reaction as you did. There was some great power up front, but there was also a lot of detail that I just feel was underselling what North Bend's potential could be. Mm-hmm. But then, again, to your excellent point about who the audience is, I mean, is it the state of Washington? Is it to our future selves? So there has to be some of that in here. So I'm wondering if, on that point, we can actually make this more of a concise, truncated draft and just really keep it clean, simple, and to the point. And so maybe it might go faster than what I'm anticipating, at least for this chapter.
So I think of a question is the purpose of this document then. Is it to support tourism? Is it to be readable by investors, builders, you know, companies, and as well as the state, right?
I would say both, because if we have outside people looking to invest in our community and we have a strong, concise, to-the-point statement about what we are and who we are and not limiting it to certain industries, that's a strength and power statement, right? So anybody coming in can say, oh, exactly to your point, REI might be more interested in this. But if we pigeonhole ourselves into one sort of industry, they're going to look at that as a barrier or a hurdle, right? So I think making it more open and broad might be a better thing.
And keep in mind, this document is intended, you know, of course, a company coming here to locate will read through to see what we stand for. But it also, it predominantly is for decision makers. And as we get growth that comes in and it goes through the process, those decision makers and hearing examiners go to these policies and either use them to strengthen our review and approval of the application or to deny it. So there's many different readers of this document, but it really needs to be something that says this is what your economic vision is.
I think there's a lot of similarities between the two versions, which honestly for me makes it pretty difficult. You know, I think that there are improvements in Dick's version, but there's a lot of similar wording, so I find it hard. I flip back and forth, is that in that one, or is that carryover, or is that new? You know, so it makes it difficult for me to distinguish. I can tell there's a different tone, I think that's what we've discussed, but if we just accepted the new version, what would we be missing from the other one? That's where I'd have to be flipping back and forth on pages so many times, because it's not like there's just a little edit here that we're focusing on. We really have to look through every word and cross-reference. I think that that's what will hold us up.
So why don't I suggest this? Why don't we kind of table the discussion? I'll go back, merge to the best of my ability from a professional standpoint what I think you guys want to hear. I'll highlight sections where, you know, Dick might have had a point, like a manufacturing industrial. I'll say, let's chat about this. Where you guys could give me maybe a tad bit of input is the goals between the two, the five goals, are very similar.
They're almost
exact. And so if we went to Dick's version on page 7 of his, there is, the question I had, number one, is goal 5, okay? with an emphasis on lower B&O fees, business and operations tax. There's about, I think, 13 or 15, there's about half of the King County cities have B&O tax, half don't. It is a strategy, but it's also the same reason why North Bend has been able to keep its taxing of its citizens down, because the businesses mainly, outlet mall, some of the more highway-oriented transient businesses are really the ones driving our general fund.
So to your point, that's the one thing that I was missing from this document is, what is our revenue streams for the city and how have they varied from the days of timber to now?
Right. Okay.
I don't know what data we have, but I don't know our economic story by this document.
Okay. I would add to that, what, and I realize that it's not built yet, but as we're looking forward over the next 5 years, what is the expectation for taxes coming in from the hotel once it's located out there?
Or okay. Future expectations,
exactly.
Yeah.
So the,
or where we see our sweet spot.
Okay.
As I wrote this, as I was addressing this, I was realizing 30 years ago this year, we had the great idea of changing our town to an alpine village. It's all coming down. It's all coming down.
Okay, so what we'll do is we'll add a city revenue section.
There's a historically the largest percentage, you know, there's a place in there where it would fit.
Yeah. So we'll beat that up.
Would that include projections or just this is who we are today?
It will definitely tell us today. Projections, I'll have to, let me talk to the finance director and see how easy projections would be. We can project stuff like the hotel. We can give you projections on things like that.
Permit fees?
We can do that also.
In a short
time. Assuming a general flow of development continues to, and development's a bit like this. Like right now, we're actually in a platting stage, so all the lots are being entitled. Everything's happening. All the paperwork's basically being done. Next year, we're going to have a boom of vertical, so all the building permits will be going up because we have 700 basic lots in the pipeline right now, but none of those are being built. Next year, it'll be the billing phase. So all of a sudden, permit fees are going to go like this. So so why don't we just go ahead and make it easy, come back with one document. I just wanted to make sure you saw both, because Dick really put a lot of time into it. I really appreciate that. So we'll come back next meeting with the two documents merged and rip it apart however you guys want, make it read exactly what how you want it, and then we'll move forward.
I do want to go around to see if there's anything else that the commission has ideas on so that it can be incorporated so we can save some time. So Elizabeth or Mom?
The one thing is to make sure that those numbers are separate. I'm always concerned when we look at money coming into the city for permit fees because they go away eventually.
Right.
And when we're looking at this and we're planning a strategy that will hopefully go 20 years into the future or more, while it's nice to know those numbers, we shouldn't be relying on them because eventually that's going to fall down. I think that the city of Snoqualmie is a good example of when that happens.
I agree with you, and I should have made that clearer, is not to put a bulk number, but to have them bracketed out just so we can understand.
Adding otherwise, most of my other comments are language, and I can wait until we're.
Although, if you would like to send me, if you have thoughts email-wise, because as I'm doing this, if you just email me your thoughts, language-wise.
I finish typing it up.
Perfect. And that's where I was going to go with it as opposed to doing a round robin, because that's where a lot of my
comments
and strike-throughs and highlighting is coming from, is more in that narrative talk track.
Send it to
so
me,
I'll
yeah.
just email that over to you. Just think that probably be, and then as you're assimilating or aggregating, you'll probably see a lot of consistencies. Maybe. I'm assuming that would be helping the editing.
That'd be perfect.
So I do want to also ask, we talked about some of the tourism aspects of this document. If you're reading this, how specific should we be in highlighting some of the things we have? I look at it and I don't see anything about watching wildlife.
That's a great point, because do we need to get that specific? I mean, I think it's, for me, it's more of, here are some examples of our state. I think anybody walking through our community would recognize what assets we have that are relevant to them without us having to list them. Now, maybe it would be more important to put the key ones that we actually will see in the projections that will be driving that revenue and driving that economic growth. But I don't know if we would need to have a huge list of everything.
So I see some things called out, and I just,
well, that's where
I'm kind of challenged in what we're describing or not describing. Because if I know what the Middle Fork is, and I think in our original document, the eastern portion of North Bend is enhanced by the Middle Fork Natural Area. The natural area is located along the Middle Fork of the Snoqualmie River and is easily accessed via North Bend Exit 34. It contains primarily forested lands along Middle Fork and its tributary streams, providing important habitat for terrestrial and aquatic wildlife. And then it says it offers a tremendous amount of outdoor recreational opportunities. It's a class 1 or 3 rapids, depending on the time of year. There's over 1,000 miles of trails. Like, there's so much data about just that region. I don't get that it's 1,000 miles of trails. It's just a tremendous...
But how much of an impact is that on this particular chapter, right? Because I think the last sentence in that paragraph was pretty much as we need to focus on.
I'm not trying to get specific in one area. I think we're falling short in all our areas that we're not giving some kind of grand statement of how much outdoor activity for tourism, mountain biking, horseback riding, camping, mountain climbing, all of that is part of us and is a main reason why we thrive.
Absolutely hear you and support you on that. I'm just worried about creating an inventory document. I mean, those are things that we have, and maybe there's some beautiful statement that can sum it all up.
To kind of maybe meet in the middle on this, one thing this document should do is tell you, it should direct you to the next steps in realizing your goals, right? So one thing, Dick brought it up, and I love it, because, one thing that we've done is we've hired a visitor information center director. That person is supposed to implement our brand, okay? The city also has a part-time events person that we contract with. So one thing that we're trying to do is grow that person's job and co-mingle it with, so we do have a tourism liaison here. So one thing you could think about in this plan is saying a goal is by the end of 2016 to have a tourism implementation plan or basically create a plan. How do you want to market? How do you want to get the tourism dollars into the city? You can't do it in this document, but this document can tell you to go do it. And then that allows me to go to City Council and say, hey, there's a policy in our economic development chapter that says we're going to create a tourism implementation plan. And maybe we can get some funding to do that. Maybe it's a staff person. So those are the kind of things that I think would be...
Right. And then we also have a place to point to from this document as a place on the website where you can find out all the things that
right.
are.
Right.
And we don't list that.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anything else from the commission before we move on?
I think kind of a blend of your conversation too is this. It's a little bit of a brain dump here, I guess. This page of the North Bend branding team summary, just kind of taken out in this version. I think that where the intent was in here, but it has a lot of the things that I think North Bend is good for. A lot of people come here as far as the outdoor activities.
Because that could be a clever narrative in the introduction. Right? Here's how we see we are. In fact, we did a branding, event, and this is what our residents and citizens are saying about it.
And there's probably something in here, but bullets or these little dashes kind of make it stand out a little bit.
So I'll just let you know, this is a cut and paste of the actual branding summary that the branding team did in 2009. So this was the way it looked when the city council approved the brand. And that's why I kept it that way. So
I think you can get rid of that and just go right to the point that something was done and here's what we found.
Yep.
Because that's another document that somebody can track down if they really want.
Good point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll help tighten our narrative in this particular chapter.
Okay. Sounds good.
Omit needless words.
Yeah, I like that.
All right.
When did we come out of moratorium again?
2009.
So, backstory was we were talking about economic development when we couldn't do any at the time.
Right.
Right. So, when Dick first brought this up at the last meeting, I came into that meeting thinking, hey, we had to try and run this out fivefold. Yeah, let's see how it goes. That was my mindset after going through the first time. But looking back to 2009 and since then, you're right, Dick, it needs to be focused. So I just wanted to point out that this was all written at a time and we were hoping to have something to talk about. Now we do. So pretty cool.
All right.
The only thing that I would, I guess, maybe suggest is I like maps, you know, and so this first map kind of puts us on the map, right? But then we make reference to a lot of different areas in the local, you know, as far as North Bend and the area around. So I understand the purpose of this, and I like the purpose of this, but maybe in conjunction with it, we also have, you know, zoom in with the Google Maps. Where is the Middle Fork? Where are all these natural areas or you know, attractions relevant to the downtown? And this is where I want to start my search.
The way I think this document is part of this chapter 9 of a several chapter document that also have maps attached to the reference the maps. Because the text are the things that you're
talking about. Okay.
Rather than link bounded by kind of photo, an overlay that shows it, because and if it is the aerial photos, you get a visual of we're surrounded by green. I think that speaks.
Yeah, it's a quick assessment of, oh my God, look at these resources that are right here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it is chapter 9, so the reader will be so exhausted by this.
We gotta get a little eye candy.
Well, they'll be so committed since they've come back.
Right, that's a good point. All right. Sounds good, guys.
Okay. Well, let us move on to the brand new capital facilities element. I'd like to thank our public works director, Mark Rios. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
All right, for joining us. Jenna, would you be so kind as maybe to give us an introduction to this chapter?
Yeah, well, Mike, do you want to do this?
Mike's put a lot of time. It's been a team effort, though. I mean, we work together trying to figure out what direction we need to take on this, working with our public works. And there's a lot of things in here, and perhaps too much in the existing document. The existing document's 46 pages, and it tends to read more as a novel than a plan. So one of our key goals in here is to simplify that and to eliminate redundant policy and text and plans. For example, if you look at the current economic development element, you look at the transportation section, and it has a transportation improvement plan vastly different from the one that we actually adopt every year. We don't want to have those disharmonies. It'll create confusion, it'll create people coming in with the wrong information. So we want to just use the right tool for the right purpose. And so one of our objectives in this is to simplify, provide a very brief summary of the facility, and then reference out to the functional plan that's actually developing the improvements planned to meet our level of service standards. So that's kind of the broad level summary. Growth Management Act requires us to do a number of things in our capital facilities element. It's inventory the facility, the particular facility, so that includes water, sewers, stormwater, parks, and schools.
Stormwater.
And then provide a projection of whether or not you're meeting your level, you will be able to meet your level of service need with your projected population growth and your full build out. So there's a lot that goes into that, a lot relating back to what your impact fees are to fund your improvements to get to that build out population. So we can just go through section by section describing very briefly the amendments. But again, we're not trying to compare this to the old document. It's a rewrite to very dramatically simplify it.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys want to go section by section, or do you just want to start with kind of general questions? Because tonight's a good night to ask Mark if you have facility questions. He's going to be the guy.
Sure, come on.
Just before we get into questions, which I think we might want to do first, Mark, you made a reference to projections. We just passed by the Planning Commission our land use chapter where we have new projections. Have those been shared, I guess, with Public Works to get an eye on the possible build outs and employment numbers for our city?
Yeah, Mark's seen the land use chapter. The actual projections, population and job growth, even with your amendments, didn't change our overall planning and needs from a transportation.
There weren't a huge difference.
There wasn't a lot of huge. It was kind of more of a shift.
It's just a big number to me or somebody.
Yeah.
To make the North Bend. Okay, so I'll open it up on Planning Commission. Anybody have questions for Mark? Who would like to begin?
Talk sewer, Mark. Okay, so where we're at with our sewer system is constructed, you're probably familiar with, a $19 million ULID out to Trucktown, lots, hundreds and hundreds of manholes, and about 15-mile pipe, sewer pipe. So that collection conveyance system is in. That really expanded our system. At our wastewater treatment plant right now, we're at about 60 to 70% for hydraulic and treatment capacities. What our PhD consultant is telling us is based on BOD and total suspended solids that we can handle roughly 1,100 more lots or so, give or take about 300 to 400. Just depends on, you know, how many people are living in houses. If you've got large houses and there's only one person living in them, you're going to have less of an impact on a treatment plant than you would if you had 12 people living in a house. So from a sewer standpoint, I'm concerned down the road that if we don't do anything now, if we don't start getting proactive, that in 3 to 5 years, all of a sudden, we're going to have to say, all right, there's another moratorium. We can't allow more growth. We allowed these 1,000 homes in, and now, you know, we can't discharge, you know, effluent into Snoqualmie River that's not treated. We won't have the hydraulic capacity in the plant to handle it all. We treat each day right now about, imagine a football field, everybody can imagine that 7 foot deep of sewer comes through that treatment plant every day. What's going to happen in about 5 years, 6 years, it's going to double. And so what we need is larger oxidation ditches out there, larger clarifiers, a more sophisticated UV system, larger solid handling. So what we're doing at Public Works is interviewing consultants, large consulting firms, about potential options. Some of the options are expanding our current facility, and it's down there on the South Fork. You've probably driven by and know where it is. So basically doubling or tripling the size of the operations down there, that's option one that we're considering. Option two is a brand new wastewater treatment plant on a different location in North Bend. We're also talking to the city of Snoqualmie, their mayor and their city manager, as well as Mayor Ken and Mondi. And Jenna, you were at that meeting as well, about creating an upper Valley sewer district, where it's the tribe, city of Snoqualmie, and city of North Bend all together. And then we create new commissioners with that district. The problem with that, that's probably the most expensive option, is we have to get sewer from North Bend to Snoqualmie, which is 4 miles away, which is about $8 to $10 million. Who pays for that? Do the developers pay for that? Do the existing North Bend residents pay for that? Does Snoqualmie pay for that? Does the tribe? So we're just here at the very conceptual stages right now of evaluating that. And so I'm right now about to start. I'm awaiting a work scope from our consultant that we selected, a company called Tetra Tech in Bellevue. They're a large firm. They manage lots of wastewater treatment plants up and down all over the Northwest. So it's about a 3 to 5 year process by the time you get your conceptual design. So we got to figure out what option we're doing first, what makes the most sense for North Bend. Then we've got to figure out how much is this going to cost. And then we've got to figure out who's paying for it, and how is it paid, or is it existing ratepayers, or do we raise the general facility connection charges to developers? That's popular right now for our city council and Mayor Ken, is, hey, we want development to pay for development. Right now our charge is about $5,000 per new lot that comes in.
Do we need to raise that to $10,000? Do we need to raise it to $15,000? Do we need to raise it to $12,000? What is that? What about the existing deficiencies in our plan? How much are existing residents? Do we need to consider raising their rates? So wastewater treatment plant's a big part of our sewer system, and so we're trying to be proactive as much as we can about it right now so that it doesn't bite us in the butt in 5 years.
So just so I have some sense of scale, we all know by permits, both from plats that are preliminary and then or the building permits that may or might come online next year, we're saying 500 new houses potentially next year. Extrapolate, play the market, call it 1,000 over the course of 3 years. If I said, here's the check, build a facility for the extra 1,000 homes, how long would it take you to get it done?
It's going to take 2 or 3 years to get it done from today. You get approval from Department of Ecology. There's also concerns about temperature increasing, so we're discharging the treated sewage into the river. So it's treated. It's not, I wouldn't drink it, but it does, when it goes through all the systems, it raises the temperature. It raises the temperature of the river. That's not good for fish. So what type of shade structures do we have on that? Do we fully enclose it? Lots of detailed technical questions, each one with a dollar figure attached. So now 2 to 3 years is kind of best case scenario. If somebody said, all right, Mark, here's $20 million, go make it happen, I would probably need 2 or 3 years to make it happen.
So our balance against that, though, is our concurrency regulations. So that requires that if there is not capacity demonstrated at the treatment plant or for water or for other facilities, the development actually doesn't happen.
Well, that was kind of where I was headed with this, because we're all about economic development and planning, and there's a lot of energy around it right now. I'm just looking at this elephant that we've been talking about for at least a year, and we've got expansion on the books that we already know, and I'm really clear now, thank you for that. We're going to have to stop it. The natural expansion that we project is going to have to be stopped, no matter what we do, based on the sewer, as a linchpin.
Commissioner Ryan first.
Mark, when you sit around the shop with your team, you talk about the various options. Where does the option of building a new facility more central to town fall?
Well, we've got a lot of constraints, unfortunately, in North Bend. Most of North Bend's in the floodplain, so it's difficult. Right now, the site is in the floodplain, the current site. Now, the actual, where the treatment happens, the oxidation dips and the clarifiers, those are just barely above the floodplain, so there's not a lot of available good property to put a wastewater treatment plant. So that's just from a topographic constraint. Then there's the kind of the residential aesthetic, cosmetic constraint of, I came here and we got our treatment plant right in downtown, and then 2 weeks in I get odor complaints about our dryer, and I'm like, why is our wastewater treatment plant, you know, 50 feet away from homes? So then I talked to my consultant and said, hey, you know, what is it, if you were going to design a wastewater treatment plant today, what is the minimum distance you would put a treatment plant, even if it was fully scrubbed and enclosed in buildings? He said typically 300 feet is the minimum distance you would have from the facility to where residential homes are. So that's another constraint. As we have our treatment plant, there's a mobile home park that's right on top of it. And when we get the complaints from the trailer park and they live 50 feet away, I kind of scratch my head and go, well, you know, wait a second, did you know that when you moved in? Because that treatment plant's been there for a long time, was before you moved into this trailer park. So that's kind of a tough thing of that existing site. So I kind of feel like maybe best case scenario 50 years down the road when I'm long gone is maybe that Upper Valley, Snoqualmie Sewer District makes the most sense for all the stakeholders involved.
Where does this fall into your deliberations? If you had the choice of place to go, where would you put it?
I think City of Snoqualmie has more room with their facility down there, and plus they discharge into the lagoons, which overflow into the Middle Fork, and there's a lot larger mixing zone down there. They have more real estate. It's also located farther away from residential areas. And Department of Ecology, I believe, all things being equal, only want one treatment plant, because when you have multiple treatment plants, there's so many people involved, there may not be expertise at each of these plants, and that's why Department of Ecology is very reluctant to give the tribe approval for a new treatment plant. So that's why the tribe is talking to North Northland and still call me about, we want development in the tribe. You know, we want to build hotels and lodges, all this neat stuff, but they can't.
From a purely, like, logical standpoint, I think the sharing with partnering up with Snoqualmie and the tribe is really great for North Bend. Number one, we'd be able to get our shoreline back, and number two, Snoqualmie's location is ideal from a impact, or it has low impact on residential. It actually, with their growth, potential growth being between current Snoqualmie Ridge and the casino, that kind of whole hillside, all their growth will, and the mill site, feed downhill, so it's all gravity fed, so it's affordable for them. And the $10 million to run it out there versus what building a new one for us is still.
So we have are there models in the state or outside the state where a city has turned over their sewer treatment to their neighboring city, and how is that working for them? What are some of the pitfalls doing that?
There is. It's happened several occasions, and I just can't think of which one. In fact, when we were talking with the consultants, they were part of that process to combine small districts into one larger district. One of the problems is, and I've experienced this in the private sector and in my former job, is when you have everything centralized in a city, you have sewer, water, storm, transportation, parks, you have the engineers all around the table say, okay, this is where the sewer needs to go, this is where the water needs to go, and you're also looking at crossings underground, because all of our civil engineering infrastructure, other than the streets, is underground, and you just don't see it. And so when everybody's in the same group, same table, they're reviewing the plans together. When you're at different districts and the cities are different, they have different agendas, they're not talking to each other as easily. So that's one concern I do have with a separate Upper Valley sewer district is, you know, they're going to be their own, they would be their own district. It's another possible option here is we just contract directly with Snoqualmie, and we just pay a surcharge for all of our sewer being treated by the city of Snoqualmie. I don't think politically that will happen. That's just my guess, that North Bend's going to want more influence on the sewer so that we won't be held hostage by rates.
Precisely.
Yeah. So I think what would happen if it's an Upper Valley sewer district is you'd have a commission. One commission would be from North Bend City Council, another one would be from Snoqualmie City Council. It would also be represented by the tribe, and maybe two at large is kind of how we're talking, envisioning this rolling out, if it were to happen. The other thing to think about, too, is Snoqualmie's current facility is not set up for our infrastructure, so we have to plunk down $10 million just for our existing facility so that it's treated down there. So that's an extra cost in addition to getting it from the sewer from point A to point B. And also we've got a facility that's worth money over there. So if it was brand new, it's a $20 million facility, but now that it's depreciated, it may be worth $10 million of infrastructure. But there's still usable infrastructure that happens every day, and so we'd be kind of, you know, kissing that away. So I think it's maybe one step back to take ultimately two steps forward.
I think the important thing is that the step we are right now is Mark is working to get all the information back from the consultants so the city and the city council can make a decision on where, which direction to best take this away. That I see happening in the next 9 months.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it's a full year, but so this year is going to be
targeting March.
March, okay.
Yeah,
so.
So when we look at, for example, under goals of policy, the CF 1.3, where it says require the developer proposals are reviewed for available capacity, would be on page 10.
Okay.
That's a policy that can't be met because we already know that our sewer system, our management facility over there can't handle much more capacity.
No, okay, so
So the goal should be have an improved facility or make it a proaction where you're not going to be able, you may review it, and the answer is no, we can't build upon your request.
This one is kind of important from a GMA standpoint. They want to see that in here because there's a state law, it's concurrency, that basically requires us, the city, anytime that development happens, to go through what they call a concurrency test. And that's making sure we basically have to confirm that we have capacity in our streets, sewer, stormwater, water, and transportation. Yeah, streets. So if the answer is no, then we by law have to deny that application, or at least say you can't go forth. So I think what would be important here is to keep the goal saying you need to make sure you have the capacity, but then that's where put the action item that you want to see after that in that goal or that policy. So then you could say something like, work to resolve the wastewater treatment plant issue within 5 years, or
within the time frame of this plan, which is 6 years, right? The aggregate every 6 years, or earlier, but they get a goal that can be met. Not that you wish upon it, but actually, that's why Jim's question is so important. What is start to stop? What time frame? You're saying 3 years.
That's probably best case scenario.
For a new facility, or just
for a new facility beyond the line. If it's a new district, so then I would say probably looking more like 4 or 5 years. Just it's a lot more complicated.
You're looking at 1,000 new homes on the east side of North Bend in that time frame.
Probably, yeah, 1,000 homes. Well, just overall in North Bend, not necessarily east side. Some of them are right downtown near E.J. Roberts Park. Some of them are in Maloney Grove. Some of them are 4 to 32nd. They're all over the place. So. Yeah. There's a lot of homes, but our treatment plant consultant's saying, hey, no problem, 1,100, 1,200, 1,300 one-offs on the ULID, we're going to let them through, so we're fine for a while. And it's important to know these PPLATs have done lots of, laid out thousands of lots in King County, and it takes a while. It takes 3 to 4 years to get your survey, your entitlements, your engineering, your construction, and then you actually have to build the homes, then you have to sell the homes, people move in. And then you're getting the impact of the sewer system. So that whole process takes 4 or 5 years.
Would you keep the current system as a backup in case of a failure at Snoqualmie? If Snoqualmie couldn't handle our fluid, would that be a good backup source?
I think the backup source, the redundancy, would happen at Snoqualmie, because if we're not having staff here, I mean, we're going to demolish. If this is no longer functioning, we're not going to have staff there. There's not going to be electricity. I mean, it's you wouldn't have the treatment capabilities or the staff.
So you would do more than mothball it. You would remove it.
I'd remove it, like, and consider a park or something like that, or a restoration. Yeah. No, it's an eyesore right now. And one of the things I want to do is landscape it from the state route. So you see roadies and hydrangeas and cypress, and you don't see, you know, brown waterfalls and aerators and backhoes and assists. But that's just me. That's maybe the planner in me.
That's us too.
Commissioner Gilbert.
They're happy.
Sorry.
I may be making an assumption here, but in all these plans that we're looking at, are we considering the expense of staff versus not? So if we no longer have to maintain staff for that location, is that going into the plan?
Well, it will be built into the plan. I mean, one way or the other, there will be staff that are managing this sewer treatment.
Always more, Elizabeth. Always more.
Hey, just, you know, if we shift that away from, just making sure it's in that, if we shift that away from North Bend's expense column into whether it's a district or a direct agreement with the city, what does that do for us? And are we, in fact, including that in our thought process and delivery?
We're also comparing different treatment options, so we have a pretty simple system with UV oxidation ditches and clarifiers, and it doesn't take as many employees. A lot of cities that have smaller footprints in denser areas use what's called membrane bioreactors, and it takes a lot more staff to run those, and so we're trying to keep it simple.
So is policy 3.1, which is on page 11, does that set the stage for joining Snoqualmie?
I don't know. I don't think it was written that way, but maybe that's...
Will this support increase the joint development and use of cultural community facilities?
Well, it's not a cultural
But maybe it's a community. I don't know, would you consider that a community facility?
Which one?
Page 11.
That's what I would.
Is that the way a lawyer brings?
I think it's referred to things like that, the farm.
Yeah.
Those similar, sure.
Yeah.
I think if it was, I think if you wanted to be written that way, I would add a word or two different, but.
It's an infrastructure.
The title of the goal is develop capital facilities in a manner that minimize adverse impacts and maximize opportunities. So this, it could be anything. It could be a sewer treatment facility.
You could say cultural, community, and infrastructure.
Yeah.
And then it's covered.
That would be good, yeah.
If you wanted to.
Questions?
Jen, I didn't get, you said something earlier I didn't want to let go because I want to collect clear. You said get our waterfront back.
Oh, I meant like what Mark just described, like, you know, you could create a park there, you do something.
No, that waterfront foot's pretty valuable.
Yeah.
Throwing garbage at it.
You span the you could span the trailer park.
Sure. Yeah. I could live there.
If it wasn't
for the stitch, I'd be there every day. So the next question is, what's the number, just wag it, for a new building permit? By the time it goes from P-plat to construction sale, what's the income to the city, ballpark?
You mean once the plat's approved?
Yep.
So, okay.
Impact fees, which is the principal funding mechanism for these facilities, it's about $21,000.
So, I was going to say, it's right now about, I think it's 24.
Okay.
That number's going to go up. We're looking at increasing the traffic impact fee. We're definitely going to be looking at our sewer connection fees.
The water fees are going to stay the same for a while.
So that quick math for 500 homes is $12 million. We just came up with 10. So play the math.
No, that's
that covers transportation. That covers parks. That covers.
Well, what I'm getting to is if we don't have the sewer in place and there's demand for 500 completed houses, it's worth the initial $10 million that we didn't decide to spend to keep the train moving. That's all I'm saying. Just by that math. We can't issue a building permit, we can't collect the 24,000 times 500, then why didn't we spend the $10 million to get there?
Yeah, and there's public works trust funds, there's bonds we can get, so we can get low interest rate loans to do this early. So
I think the biggest one for me from an economic standpoint is houses are great one-time revenue. That's what they are, one-time.
Yep.
And then they actually cost money to manage.
Yep.
My main concern with the sewer is maintaining capacity to respond to a great employer that comes in one day and says, hey, I want to locate XYZ, and it's a, say, medical technical facility, and we're excited about it all of a sudden. But with that also, those kind of facilities come with pretty high impact fees. So the beauty of having some of those larger ones come through too is the critical mass of development driving some of these needed improvements would be more easily paid for. For example, we don't have sewer on the other side of the river simply because there aren't really enough properties to pay into the development of a line over there at this point.
But so, if they request an annexation, or if they requested that service, you'd have to provide it.
No, they would have to build it on their own dime.
Exactly.
Development pays for development. And so it's just a cost valuation.
Utility local improvement.
I mean, I've always heard the wives too. I think it's wrong, but I've always heard it because nothing's going to happen there. But there's no sewer over on the other side of the river because the city doesn't want it there.
No.
Even if the landowners wanted it, the city wouldn't do it.
No, that's not true.
We don't have the money to do it right now.
The city isn't going to build that and tax our citizens to do so. If somebody came in, like say a Nintendo wanted to expand Nintendo, or Miller site, which is kind of all the property over by Tollgate that isn't owned by Nintendo, if they wanted to develop, they would be required to to connect the line to our wastewater treatment plant, then the process would occur.
Now, so I'm thinking of the area by the storage facility and the old sheriff office, that strip, and all the Encompass place and all that. If 60% of landowners wanted a sewer in, all they had to do would be to apply for it and write a check. It wouldn't be a deliberation if they could or couldn't have it.
Correct.
Correct.
Thank you.
And I've been talking with the Silver Creek neighborhood because there's been several members of the community asking about sewer out there, and there's, I don't know, maybe it's 300, 400 homes. And so I wagged it about $5 to $10 million to build sewer collection and conveyance. Fortunately, the sewer system would be a little bit cheaper to construct out there because we don't have formal roads, we don't have curb gutter and sidewalk out there, we don't have storm drainage pipes everywhere. It's a lot more expensive to tear out new infrastructure than tear out old infrastructure. But the problem is with Silver Creek is it's lower than our treatment plant, so we need a lift station somewhere, and those lift stations are $500,000.
Yeah.
And then you got to gravity everything to a lift station, and then you got to pick it up. Yep, force it back into our treatment plant because you can't just let the sewer just go where it wants to. So about $5 to $10 million, and we could if they're serious about it, and I'm happy to come up with red line designs. We could figure out, okay, the average homeowner, are you going to be assessed over 15 years? Is it going to be $5,000? Or $25,000, what is that number? So the lower the number, the more people will be interested in doing it.
How much of that are the expenses associated with practice, especially for catch areas, lift stations and the requirements that happen?
The lift station would have to be raised up, so we would do what's called compensatory storage to bring the facility up above the floodplain, and then we'd over-excavate somewhere else.
Yeah, or like you saw that one in Snoqualmie on Park Street.
I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
Do we currently have sewer and water going by all of our industrial and commercial properties except the piece out that's west of Snoqualmie River?
Yeah, everything except the map behind you, everything pretty much in that blue quadrant, the north part of town, none of that. There's some commercial property Encompass and the Chinook Lumber. None of that has sewer, but all of that has water.
Yeah.
Everything in Trucktown pretty much has sewer and water. The water out there is actually Slough Water Association. The east third of our town is a different water association than ours.
The only commercial area lagging behind for sewer is west of Southport.
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't want to get us off track, but it always comes to me when I start thinking about money getting spent to solve the problem. Is there any municipality or anything you've ever heard of where there's on-site taking care of their own sewer other than obviously septic systems? And I think about marine incinerator toilets and lots of things out there that have been used for 50 years. If that was incorporated into some kind of building code, there wouldn't be much going to the treatment plant.
Yeah, I think some of those incinerators work okay for small use, but if you have a large family with washing machines and dishwashers running all the time, then I'm not an expert on those, but that's what I've heard from septic designers and so forth, and some of those fringe technology groups, is that they're great for a person that uses the bathroom twice a day and, you know, doesn't use much for an incinerator. But
I'm just wondering, if I had $10 million and I knew I had a problem with my sewer, could I incentivize some builders to dial in their covenants and other things and building restrictions, and all of a sudden I've got this neighborhood of 25 homes maybe that they don't send me anything?
So you can go back to encouraging people to build septics?
And some cities do allow septics in their city, like City of Bellevue. If you're far enough away from the public sewer system, they'll let you build a septic.
Right.
But the difference between Bellevue and North Bend is our drinking water is right here.
Right.
So I think city council made a wise decision 20, 30 years ago, saying no more septics unless there's already a house there and it's a repair.
Right.
So,
you mentioned water temperature being an issue for our current facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so you favor Snoqualmie system. Could you talk a little bit how that's different in putting water into the river system?
So I don't know what their temperature of their oxidation. I believe they have some shading out there where the trees are grown up to the south of some of their oxidation ditches and aerators. Our facility out here is, it faces south, and the oxidation ditch is about 300 feet long, about 80 feet wide. We can plant trees, and they take time to grow, so that's one way to decrease the amount of heat that's, especially during those summer months, when temperature is more of a concern, when that river draws down to, you know, a fast-moving stream. It's not an issue in the winter. There's all the snow melt, and if we're not raising the temperature at all because there's such a small component. But we've talked about, that's one of another reasons that I'd like to landscape. If we are going to keep our existing treatment plant facility in North Bend, I'd like to, in the next year or so, put some serious money into putting fast-growing Leyland cypress and other trees pretty close to the oxidation that just to start providing shade.
Go ahead, Mr. Ryan.
I just have a lot of comments. Good, all the stuff. So I'm talking about the minority of this report. I think it's excellent. Getting to my own neighborhood, when I first moved into North Bend in 09, they were just putting in a sewer line right down the middle of the street and stopped it right at the gateway to the Sakali property. Now, is that the intention for that sewer line to hook up to the Sakali 156?
Sewer goes all the way out there now. So it goes all the way through Sakali property and goes out through Wood River neighborhoods, Tannerwood neighborhoods, and east.
Okay. It ended, though. There's a group of homes at the end of Tanner that doesn't have access to that sewer line.
Okay.
It didn't go down to the cul-de-sac. It stopped at the gate that went into Sakali. Yeah, it did go in, but are those last homes on the end of Tanner Road going to be able to hook up to that sewer line? You know, they're on half-acre septic systems there.
That's a good question. My guess, I haven't looked at this and I haven't been asked this, but my guess is because those homes and that cul-de-sac is to the northeast, which is upriver, upslope, and where that manhole ends, it's southwest, which is lower. If those homes should be able to decommission their septic tanks and gravity, put a new 8-inch or 12-inch diameter PVC system so that could extend a half mile to the cul-de-sac to the end of the road. So my guess is those guys aren't going to be out of luck. But it costs money to put the infrastructure on the ground.
But at some point, those septic's going to fail and you get the river right there. It's just going to happen sometime. So, and they have no place to add a secondary drain field on their property.
There's some small lots and not big lots out there. You're right.
There's a question they went in, and it's still a question.
Well, there's certainly, it can be done. It's just a matter of who pays for it, how much is it going to cost. So
15, 20 years down the road, most of the septic systems are at the end of their life.
They're in the middle of
many.
The owner of my home when I bought it just replaced the subject. Put it up on top of the road with 20-year life and train to played out. And that's going to be happening now. All these homes are built in 87, 88.
Right now, if they wanted to go through the steps to connect, they could apply. They would have to pay for the extension of the line, so not knowing exactly where the connections are.
What they can do is we've done this before.
Is it allow septic tanks to fail along the river? Are you more correct about that? Even in advance warning that this is ahead of.
Well, I don't have the staff to go out and knock on everybody's door and say, hey, is your septic tank failing? It's really a health department jurisdiction. But what I can tell you is a group of residents can put together what's called a latecomer agreement, so they can group together 10 residents, 20 property owners, whatever, maybe it's 10, and say, all right, we're going to pony up and build. And if they do this, it's a non-prevailing wage job. So actually, the private developers, they can build infrastructure cheaper than I can for my projects because I have to pay Seattle wages. That's the whole prevailing Davis-Bacon Act. So they can build a sewer system for probably $200,000, where it costs North Bend, me, $300,000. But then if anybody connects into that system within 15 years, they have to pay a portion of what those original property owners put up. So it's called a latecomer agreement. And so the city can be the middleman and manage those as well. So,
not doing the engineering of this, if we have to have all of our effluent from truck town all the way through town be delivered through pipes to the Snoqualmie Toba Road Station, how does that work? We have several pump stations that keep moving down the line? Or how's that?
Yeah, that's a good question we have. What will never be decommissioned? Let's say we use that Upper Valley District scenario. We still have a major wet well with three pumps right at the treatment plants just before it's fenced in enclosure. That pumps the sewer up because it's really low, and we still have to get it across the bridge, across the river. So you either can bore underneath it, under the river, or you anchor it to the bridge. Either way, it's going to require a force main type system because you got to either lift it up to be higher up, so it's just below the road or next to the road. So there'll still be lift stations as you make your way down.
And at what point does the Snoqualmie system then takes over and sucks it toward the plant? Pardon my language. It's got to be a hell of an engineering.
Yeah, it is, and I'm sure the engineers would love to design it. And that's what they do. And we think we can gravity it, but we're not 100% sure, except for the bridge crossings. We probably need some more stations
here. It seems like our growth is dependent upon the scheme. Seems like we're going to grow out the way we're looking at the growth we have and the development of recreational amenities and overnight facilities and all that. This plan of taking it to Snoqualmie has got to work.
Yeah, right now our population, I think, went up to 6,600. I think in 3 to 5 years you may see something like 9,000, 10,000 people. And at that point, yeah, it's like our treatment plant is, you know, like I said, we're about 60-65% over there of capacity. So, and then if the city ever does what Issaquah is starting to do, you probably have driven down there and you see cranes in Issaquah, mm-hmm. and they're going up. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting more density in that. And that could be, we could be like where North Bend was, or where Issaquah was 30 years ago when farms were being converted to subdivisions. Sammamish Plateau was, and I grew up in Bellevue in Seattle, so I've been around a long time. Mm-hmm. And Bellevue's, you know, it's been 20 years. They've been growing up for 20 years. So that's why I think maybe long run, an Upper Valley sewer district is best for the whole valley, rather than trying to cram, you know, like I always tell my engineers, 10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag, no pun intended here. It's just not going to fit over there at some point. And then you've got all this, you put another $20 million of infrastructure in there, and then, you know, there's just no more room. You got to buy the trailer park, and then now the treatment plant's right next to downtown. So, but it's a lot of money. We have to figure out how we're going to pay for it.
Well, it's on everyone's mind.
I think about it probably as much as anybody. So.
I'm sure you do.
But one thing the city council is doing, though, and been great for Mark, is they are making it a priority. We are hiring a consultant to really dial in on the options we have and run cost analysis. And you've even hired... you recently hired, what's your newest position over there?
Oh, we have a new wastewater treatment plant manager.
So we have a wastewater treatment plant manager. So there is a focus from the city standpoint on solving the problem. It's clearly a complex issue. So it's like Mark said, it's going to be probably not until March where we solve the problem. But it's going to have to get solved.
Yeah, that's the constraint I see for North Bend. I mean, I think transportation-wise, you may see some intersections get clogged in downtown over time. There's just not enough right-of-way, and I don't think there's a political push to all of a sudden have, you know, this major thoroughfare down through downtown. But we're so close. We've got three or four exits onto I-90. So, you know, if you live on Maloney Grove and you know traffic's bad downtown, you can still get right on I-90. You just backtrack a little bit. So I think we're going to be fine from a transportation standpoint. And water, we got really strong water rights. It's the sewer that concerns me.
So I have a couple more questions on the sewer before we leave that topic. Anybody else want to go first? You talked about funding sources to look at. Would any of them be possibly a clean water grant? So if we're going to stop putting our wastewater into the water system, I think there would be some kind of incentive program somewhere that we could get.
We've got a really great... Well, even if we went to created the Upper Valley Sewer District, we're still going to the same drainage basin with the discharge. And our water system is actually really complicated in that we get credit for discharging our treated sewer, our clean sewer water, back to the river. We get credit through Department of Ecology for our permit about 5 years ago. We built on the side of the hill a system called Hobo Springs. It was built long before I was here. I've only been here a year. And so what we do is when the river gets really low, is we've got springs up on the hillside, we turn on the valves, and it rushes water that normally goes to a closed depression Rattlesnake Lake, and it goes to Boxley Creek. So we can run that from our offices and public workshops, turn on the switches, so then we're just 3 CFS, you know, 120, 180 gallons per minute. It's quite a lot of water, but we have to pay SPU for that because it's all about fish. You know, and all this stuff is all about the fish and tribal rights, the treaty rights. And so if we were to take that water out of the equation, then we have to pay, then we have to do more of that water mitigation on the hillside.
So give me a roundabout figure. This is a dry year. It's probably going to be a heavier year than most. But yeah, in an average summer, what is the cost to the city?
It's about $80,000 in an average year. This year, we think it's going to be closer to $150,000 that we pay Seattle Public Utilities to divert water, none of which is used as a drinking source. It's only to take water from springs that go to a closed depression and put it back in the river. Pretty crazy.
Is there any way to get out of that relationship?
That's what got us on water.
That's
which is a whole other point of contention, is why we're beholden to that.
Should I mention the reason that Seattle's sending sewage at just about the Snohomish County line? From that story, right?
So
it's the newest treatment plan
right,
anywhere in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Philosophy, right?
In the document, the water system, it talks about mouth-sized springs with 38 miles of pipe. How many wells, I guess, does the city draw from with our own water rights?
We only have, that we're drawing from right now, is Centennial Well and Mount Si Springs. So we only have two sources of water for our water system.
So. And how many residents or homes does that
another
serve?
Question.
Mike would probably know.
How many homes did that serve? I don't know. Actually, yes. Yeah, so here it is.
The one says it's 1,892 connections.
Yeah.
And
but
is
overall,
that, is that overall?
Yeah.
In about of our city, about two-thirds of it is served by North Bend Water System, about one-third by Slough Water Association.
So if I understand our water agreements, you, please correct me if I'm wrong, Slough water rights run out in 10 years?
I don't know that for a fact.
And our agreement with Seattle Public Utilities is a 50-year agreement?
I think that's 50-year. I'm pretty sure that's true. Yeah, thanks.
And so I believe Salal Water, at that time, their rights would go to the city, or where, I don't know. If they're servicing quite a lot of our development on the eastern part of town, I think in 10 years' time, where does all that extra water, if they're not, their rights don't transfer to our city, where do they go, and how can we service those customers? And so my question is, how are we going to build our own water system that can service more residents?
Well, they've got a water system in place already. Part of the concern about their water system, it's even older than ours, and a lot of the pipes are smaller than ours. So from a fire flow standpoint and from a certain pressure standpoint, smaller pipes, and you're sure, just not going to get as much water force to fight fires. So we have those concerns. I've not studied their water system in depth.
That
in detail.
End of town, though, is the end of town that is already largely developed out, so, or at least has reserved capacity. So we're talking about Sindali, we're talking about Tanner Falls.
Well, what Jenna's talking about, if we develop the area behind the truck town stop, right, and that instead of a truck lot is 2,000 or 5,000 jobs.
Yeah, you get quite a bit of water,
depending on that user.
So that's one reason that Salal's water connection charge is so high. They're $19,000 per single-family dwelling unit, which might be the highest in the state of Washington. I don't know that, but it's very, very high. So their engineers have looked at it and said, oh, we need a lot of infrastructure improvements. And so, $19,000 per unit, that's going to add up pretty fast. So
we're going to take all this Well, it, one option for our plan is to take all our sewage and ship it to Snoqualmie. My thought is there are other wastewater treatment options that might allow us to reclaim water from wastewater. And that's what the city of Olympia is doing. And so we could use that to recharge our own aquifers and our wells. And by using our aquifers, it puts cold water into our rivers versus warm surface water, right? The other thought of water supply is, if I look at the rivers right now, they're barely a trickle in the Middle Fork. It's walked across, you know, there's places that it doesn't flow. In the wintertime, it's a foot away from the road in high flow times. Is there any restriction of why we couldn't capture a high water flow, which is causing flooding downstream, and divert that into a lake or a pond of our own, which can then go to groundwater?
You can engineer it. You need a permit from the Department of Ecology for it. That would be the time to do it. But you'd need a very large holding facility that would cost millions of dollars, and where would you put that? But it's potentially an option out there. We have three reservoirs from our two sources of water right now that already hold a couple million gallons in each facility, the I-9 reservoir, the Contendo reservoir. And those, we can go through 1 million gallons really fast. I mean, we see the water in the summer, we just watch the water come down the reservoir. So let's say you wanted to build a $25 million holding facility, 25 million gallon, it would be very, very expensive. It would be somewhere on the order of 30, 40 million bucks to build something like that, where we put it. So
one of the most effective measures, though, is conservation. I just read a statistic, it was in Seattle Times, that the greatest water use any single user in the summer is just to keep our lawns green. And so if we put in place policies that encourage conservation in new developments, minimizing lawn, installing low flow fixtures, that can make a tremendous decrease in the amount of infrastructure we need to build the surface and everything.
That's a great point. And I guess to the commission, all my questions go is, you know, how dry will this year be? And if the next year is this dry, what are we able to really do for our growth, because our water's going to be so limited at that point, according to what I've learned?
We're not seeing any changes at Mount Si Springs, so this year versus previous years, so that's good news. It still flows out on mountainside at 10 CFS, and we have to let 3 CFS, cubic feet per second, 3 CFS go through the river. We're not seeing any change there. Centennial Well is a deep well. It's down 300 feet. It's below the falls. It goes way down. Not seeing any problems there. So I think we're, from a water standpoint, we're pretty strong right now.
So all the kindling dries up and we have a huge fire.
Yeah, until Mount Rainier blows too.
Right.
Deal with that.
So that was my concern, actually.
Anyone
who was watching the helicopter for the little wildfire out on the side of it knows that the river serves an important purpose when the flow is proper, because they were able to scoop water rather dramatically out of the river.
The river or Rattlesnake? You think out of the river?
I know that I saw a video of them scooping water near a bridge that they...
Well, that explains the body they just found.
No, that was only a bridge.
We'll be the last town on the planet relative to the rest of the country worrying about water. We'll just follow Arizona's lead, figure it out.
Yeah, we can dry it from plants and leaves.
We
just start xeriscaping, it works.
It,
yeah.
There's lots
of the asbestos lines, are those Salals or are they the cities?
No, we've unfortunately got about 40-50% of asbestos concrete lines. It breaks down easier. We already are in planning and design for a 412th Avenue water main replacement that connects across underneath I-90 down towards the new hotel site. So we're hopeful to get that constructed next year.
When you do that, will you lay underground utilities?
So we'll put ductile iron water main through there, and we'll repair the road to equivalent conditions. But we're not going to start adding sewer or power. No, that would be borne by Puget Sound Energy. We'll get a that, not our existing residents. So
power lines.
You don't like power lines?
They get in the way of pictures, they cause power outages.
Surprisingly, our code doesn't require, I was surprised at this, our code doesn't require developers along property frontage to underground power lines. Most cities do that, but
let's revisit that code.
I think that's a planning commission item.
That is, yeah.
So moved.
How's that?
Because I know a couple developers that have said, oh, no, Mark, you're wrong. The other cities, like, oh, you're right.
I say it every meeting.
It should be underground.
In the area of power outages, do you think the PSC might be willing to kick in a little bit of cost in undergrounding when the opportunity presents, since you're already digging down, it cuts down their expenses? They're out here a lot.
They'll say it's harder for them to access, but and it's also important to know the difference between distribution and transmission lines. Distribution lines are not too expensive to put underground. You still need conduits everywhere. But transmission lines need cooling vaults. And they're it's like $2 million, $3 million a mile to put transmission lines. And it's terribly expensive. And I've run into that fight before. And they'll say, all right, there's a the city, whoever's requesting that has to go underground gets to pay for it. And that's a RCW. They've got some pretty strong lobbyists down there, so it won't be.
There's just thinking about the vault that they put in along the falls behind commercial stations. And Snoqualmie had thought that maybe if they covered some of that cost, and maybe it was sold to everybody.
They had a big EDA grant before. Yeah, it was that all that undergrounding of downtown, which was fabulous, happened through a grant right before the big downturn. So there was still economic development grant dollars available. So they really timed a good.
I remember distinctly being told that PSC was doing some things that they were.
They probably partnered. They probably partnered. For sure. They're pretty good about that.
PSC has a huge project that's very political on the east side, running power lines, ones that go 300 feet tall, through view neighborhoods in Newcastle, Renton, Bellevue, right through Somerset. And they're fighting them tooth and nail, the mayors, about Puget Sound Energy, saying, hey, it's not necessary, or why don't you run a submersible line up Lake Washington? I mean, that's what they just did in San Francisco Bay to get more power down there. And Center Energy said, no, we don't have to do that. We're gonna, we have rights, we have right-of-ways or tracks or ownership to do it. So it's that's real hot there.
So that would be a lot of solar folks coming online pretty quick. So I'd be putting one all over my roof about that.
Yeah. Well, this year it would work for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your assessment of our roundabout down by Schwab?
I like it. I think it's I think it functions pretty well. It's I haven't seen any accidents. I haven't really seen any near accidents or near collisions. It's wide enough for trucks.
There's more evidence that the trucks do take that corner close. They have, you see double white tires all over them.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I think it was designed as a rolled curb, so they can make that turn.
Yeah, which is good. It's smart.
Mm-hmm.
But is the design of that circle adequate for the traffic that goes through there?
Yeah. I've driven through that roundabout 500 times, maybe. And I've never had to wait more than 15 seconds getting in that roundabout. So that's what's called level of service A. So that means it's functioning really well.
It's better than North Bend Way in Bendigo.
How about Park Street?
Park Street, that's one of my favorite projects. We're trying to get that one shovel ready right now. We've hired a civil engineer. I'm working with QFC on channelization. We might be putting a median between the existing roundabout and the new roundabout, and we're considering left turn pockets or not left turn pockets in the QFC, and what the channelization looks like with the post office there, the apartment complex. This roundabout's not going to be centered in the right-of-way, so because it can't be, because we don't own the real estate, unless we start condemning R&R rentals, which we don't want to do, or the nail shops, etc. So it's actually going to be offset roundabout towards the park-and-ride area over there. So that'll be really nice, because I don't like all the crisscross behavior that happens out of the post office and QFC. Nobody knows who has the right-of-way. That is dangerous. And then Downing and Park Street don't line up, so you don't know who takes the left. And so that needs to happen.
You know, and I know you must use this exit of QFC, but I do a lot. And putting those parking spots between the 76 and that exit creates a tremendous blind spot for drivers trying to go left onto eastbound North Bend Way. It is a suicide road because you don't have any sight distance. You can't see who's coming, how far away the car is. So you take a shot to get out, and you have to pull back. It's not safe. Those parking spots seem to be incidental. Why can't we just eliminate those? I'm talking about not just
all of that's being looked at with this. The project he's talking about, it's actually quite, I would say, almost right now the biggest topic kind of going on infrastructurally in downtown. And when Mark says there might be a median that goes in, either way, even if there's a median plus left-hand turn pockets, if you're headed eastbound, there might be opportunity to turn left out of a turn pocket. But coming out of QFC, it's going to be a right only.
So you will not be able to take
you left around the roundabout.
You'll go to the roundabout and then, yep.
There's no left turns coming out of QFC after this part.
So the project will...
Just like the left turn out of the post office, they still do it.
Yeah. But this will be
immediate. It's the middle of the night. There's no problem. But if it's 3 in the afternoon, it's not easy to take a left turn out of there. Post office.
We don't know how to use those roundabouts. We don't use them politely. Once you get behind a car, they tighten up. They don't let anybody in until the last one comes through. It's maddening. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a way to monitor or to feed the cars into that circle in a way that they leave room for everybody. They bunch up. It's like
a big truck.
They just draft each other, and you don't get anybody until 20 cars go by. And then you get a shot in.
I haven't experienced that, but... I think this roundabout is pretty good.
During the peak hours, I can't get away from that.
I think you also have to compare it to what the prior situation was before the roundabout. The wait times getting off of the Cedar Falls Way.
Of course.
So
I'm saying just they don't do it safe. I talked to the chief about it. He says the same thing that you guys need to speed up.
Just a question. You had mentioned... Thank you. You had mentioned dividers. Like, in my head... imagining the most extremely Jersey barriers and really hoping that is not what you're
You may have seen that Factory Way that's not very nice looking. No, we'd do something more like Coal Creek Parkway in Newcastle with flowers or grass or even maybe something like Gilman Boulevard, which is grass and maybe some street trees that are narrow, something
like
that.
So it's like a cost cutting,
saving. No. Working on the design between engineering and planning, so the median would be somewhere in the 10 to 12 foot, because right now turn pocket is 12 feet. It's going to be a 12 foot space, and it's going to be vegetated per our code, which is native vegetation, drought tolerant. It's going to look good.
We have a very conceptual level drawing over at our office in the whole corridor that shows kind of the turn lanes and the green strips and things if anybody wants to come down to look at that.
What does it look like if it's a 4-lane North Bend Way there?
4-lane without a median?
No, with the median. Two on each side.
Well, the traffic engineers are saying that's not necessary for even the next 20 years, having 2 lanes on each side. They said, you'll be able to disperse traffic with the roundabouts, no problem, 1 lanes. They ran the synchro models, and they just don't think there's enough traffic to warrant. Because I had that concern, too, is, hey, maybe we should have 2 lanes on each side. One thing we are considering, though, is if we do allow a left turn pocket into QFC, which I'm not a big fan of, but I'm kind of going along with, is that left turn, does that queue stack up back towards the roundabout? Because I don't want that new roundabout to all of a sudden clog. And then everybody goes, oh, my gosh, there is a backdoor entrance to QFC that a lot of people use, which is Downing. But one of the things we're having the traffic engineer, the civil engineer design, is kind of another right lane. So it's kind of where the shoulder is right now. So that if there ever was a backup, and there may be, that people exiting the roundabout can still drive around that queued area, that left turn movement. The traffic engineers don't want any left turn pockets, and I'm like, I'm not sure that's going to be very popular, so sorry.
Anybody think about the parades that go down the middle?
Ken did. That was one of Ken's main topics, or one of his concerns, and that's one of our, in the end, when you're designing anything, you're balancing between capacity, pedestrian safety, aesthetics,
maintenance.
And maintenance. basic thing that's like a parade. So, yes, I think we're I think we've actually come to, because we even looked at, Mark looked at a four-lane version. I think we're down to some small details now, which is how many turn pockets left, and then this concept of kind of the right kind of bypass lane and how to do that appropriately. And in the end, I think it's going to be a huge addition for downtown, and especially if it's done aesthetically, so it's greened up that kind of end of town, and I think it's going to be good.
So I don't know if transportation this fits, but I'm really proud that when we look at our traffic data, you know, we don't have fatalities. We have accident points that we're really concerned about, and that's where we want to address them before they get to a stronger level of incident. I'm thinking about pedestrian safety in and around downtown as we're having these roundabouts, and I'm wondering if lighted crosswalks seem to be very visible that have lights in the street rather than the flags crossing. I'm wondering if we need to make a new standard, you know, as that level gets busier.
I think as you see more downtown businesses come that are opening at night, because down North Bend is pretty quiet when it's dark, is my experience. But other cities, there's lots happening at dark, lots of pedestrian activity. So as the city gets more businesses, I think those definitely warrant it more pedestrians to have those lighted features in the crosswalks.
Well, kind of on that note, I'm glad you bring that up. You know, we obviously have that one out past QFC by the post office, and from my experience, the crosswalks pretty much up until the main intersection of town, I mean, it's fairly convenient, right? I mean, people are courteous. But then when you become dependent on the light, I mean, you sit there for 4 or 5 minutes waiting to cross
this light.
The light at the center of town, you know, right across from Tweeds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long wait for pedestrians.
So, WashDOT actually runs the timing on those signals. Those traffic signals are owned by WashDOT. All four of them. So, I can influence. I can say, hey, you need to change your timing patterns if I hear that it's a problem. But that intersection is actually acting as a level service F. It's not a properly functioning intersection.
Yeah, okay.
It's because those buildings have encroached so much, there's just not enough traffic lanes really to handle the traffic at that point. So.
We've talked to WashDOT a few times about changing those, especially during things like block party and things like that. And they're willing to. They're not super reactive, but they're willing to.
Yeah, if there's one particular pattern that you think has taken a long time, excessively long, let me know.
One thing that Seattle did that wouldn't work here, but I thought it was an intriguing thing, I just listened to one of the Seattle engineers, and they're doing the all walks now. So when you're in downtown Seattle, so basically an all walk is all the cars stop. So like in high density areas, the light turns, peds are walking, and you can't get that free right, so the traffic doesn't flow. So what they're doing now is they basically stop it all, and the pedestrian can cut it diagonally across the intersection, which reduces another movement of pedestrian movement. And then when all the pedestrians are stopped, cars are just flowing. So they're finding that to be a really good solution.
That was done in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. New Zealand uses it, a lot of Europeans.
They went back to it, they went back to the regular way. I don't know why they did, it seemed like it worked.
Yeah, a lot of European nations do it too, but we don't have the pedestrian flow.
Right.
Yeah. But it's kind of.
Well, I guess I'm just thinking, you know, as we're trying to support revitalization, the one time that I come to North Bend, bathrooms across the street, I'm standing there and I gotta go, and I want to get to lunch, and I'm out of time frame because I got small kids, and they're screaming, and I know I gotta wait, and blah blah blah. A 5 minute wait or a 4 minute wait.
That's a long time to wait.
That's pretty long. Yeah. I'll check on that. Which street were you crossing, Bendigo or North Bend?
I went from Birches over to Tweeds. I don't do that anymore. You know, I'll walk, if I'm over on this side, I'll walk down to Boxley's and then go across.
So maybe the signal pattern is just too long and we need to, you know, truncate them and have more.
Yeah, I mean, 4 or 5 minutes might be an exaggeration, but that's what it felt like.
I suspect that the commercial hall route through town. This is not Washtenaw's mind. It's get the good rigs through.
Right.
And it is going to impact the revitalization quality of walking downtown if we don't fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I know you have planned the Nintendo bypass, which will come with the property development out there. What other ways are we planning major routes east-west of town? And I'm thinking Highway 202 when it comes across the bridge. How can we make that a more major street that flows east to maybe whatever... what's the bridge that goes over Middle Fork to Mount Si?
Oh, Mount Si.
Is that Mount Si Bridge?
Yeah.
So this right here is pretty hot press about a month ago. It's our six-year TIP, our transportation improvement program, and it shows all the projects around the city, and there's about 30 of them. And so this is public information, of course, I can make copies and email them to Jenna and she can get them out to you. And you can look at the projects and say, okay, these make sense, and there's descriptions of the projects, or you can say, hey, how come we don't have this project on here? This needs to be on here. And then you can talk amongst your council members and say, hey, can you talk to Mark about this project, or have Mark look at this, the merits of this project. So there's a lot of projects on here. I think the total cost of these things was like $54 million.
Right. Is that the same list on our transportation plan that's like 20 long?
Mm-hmm.
That we prioritize?
Yeah, but it's the truncated six-year version.
This gets changed every year.
Mark, have you considered one-way roads in town, in the downtown core?
I have not considered that.
The council had talked about that a couple years ago, and there's two people that were very strongly opinionated on it. And the reason was is they both owned a business in Redmond on Leary Way, I think it is, which used to be one way right through downtown. And they said that was just a very difficult thing for business. Yeah. So,
and if you go one-way streets, you need a similar one-way street that has the same capacity. And right now, we've just got one shot, which is North End Way. That's got lots of, if you said this is a one-way road, you get lots of vehicles down that thing. But then your other road, what is it? Second, third, fourth, the alley behind. So there's not a consistent, traffic pattern there. So that's kind of the problem we have.
I think once the build-out grid will actually function real well. I think one of the challenges right now is we have all the trucks coming onto a tooth through town from Redmond, a lot of the Genie trucks, and they actually take a left and go down our street. And once we have the roundabout and some of the other necessary improvements, we want to actually create a truck route that sends them out to I-90 and use I-90 because those trucks are so tough on our roads. So that's one thing we're looking at actually as soon as possible is kind of keep those trucks out to I-90.
We're also talking to City Council about lowering the speed limit on North Bend Way. So as you get east of town, it's 50 miles per hour. It seems awfully fast. If you drop that down to 40 miles per hour, the trucks are going to go, oh, well, it takes me longer to get there. Maybe I should hop onto I-90. And then go 70 miles per hour, and then get off at exit 34. So I might kill two birds with one stone, as it makes it provides more public safety on the east side of town, especially as we're seeing lots of more homes out there and more pedestrians. And gets these huge trucks off.
Very excited about Nookay County, but our first most will be out that area.
No, I appreciate your idea, and I look forward to supporting that. Anything else on transportation? Municipal buildings. I love our meeting space here. It's air conditioning. It's hot water.
I agree with you.
You didn't say anything about the wine next door.
Well, that's a plus. I'm just, being
run a tap through there.
We can connect up.
That's right.
That would be a plus.
Gary, I can kind of speak to where we are on the Civic Center and the City Hall. So, as you know, the City Council has been considering a Civic Center. We actually, through the EDC's involvement, went out and hired a consultant to kind of bring the council, interview the council, get their ideas, figure out where they are financially, and then kind of put together costs and costs. So we've done that. And we know that a civic center would cost somewhere between $8 to $11 million. The civic center, the concept of the civic center, for those that aren't aware, it's more than just a city hall and a council chamber. It's creating a maybe a performing arts venue where instead of having a council chamber that gets used, you know, 5 nights a month, it's a live theater, and the council chamber uses that space a few, 5 nights a month. So really trying to basically use the Civic Center as a catalyst for redevelopment of downtown by incorporating a very human aspect of it, right? So the the analysis came back around that level, that financial price point. And so the city council kind of said, let's take a step back and let's reevaluate other options. So that's going to be done in about November. Well, some of the other options are clearly redeveloping here and just building a city hall and forgoing the civic center idea. The other one is potentially finding a different partnership or other avenues that could make the civic center more feasible. So right now we know we have an issue. We need to do something with it. We have a crumbling city hall. We know that, and clearly we are. Air conditioner is broke right now. So
incentive.
Yes. So but right now it's going to be the topic's going to get kind of readdressed in November.
Parks and open space. Anybody?
You'll see a lot more on that in about another month. The Parks Commission provides their recommendations.
And that's based off of the survey, right?
Yeah.
So was there any thought of syncing with SideView? Because we've done surveys every few years, and so there's lots of data that's openly available.
They were rely also in the 2012 SideView survey, but we also felt it was important to conduct a city resident survey as well to get better, more updated information.
Yeah. And some of those data can be cut and filtered out.
When we brought that topic up, is Meadowbrook Farm on the agenda, or is it part of the discussion element?
That will certainly be a part of the parks element update. The way that we've done that is those facilities that are in the north end of Meadowbrook Farm are also on our parks capital facilities plan. Likewise,
I think that's a good idea to use.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Trading hay. I think is a great use of its income. Oops. Maintain that farm environment.
Isn't that
about the possibility, or have you talked about the possibility of growing, using the Meadowbrook Farm for a food source?
They've talked a lot about that. The primary challenge is the elk, because you really can't grow anything other than hay. Yeah. The elk will eat it up and trample it.
We know that, but KCD has funding for communities who are interested in developing food sources for the community bank, food banks. And it might be an opportunity to get some support. You have to find a way to protect it from browsing, no question about that. But there's a lot of area out there that can be used for locally grown healthy food.
The other direction that the association is going, they're developing a business plan right now that's going to be presented to the city councils in a couple months, is they're really trying to find ways to increase use of the farm for events and activities to bring in revenue, weddings, races, things like that. And that needs to be compatible with whatever other uses are on the farm. So growing crops would probably be an exclusive use because you can then shift it around.
Although that being said, what we did do is or it would be done similar to how the Warrior Dash did it, where we said, Warrior Dash, you get 20 feet from the edge of the trees, that's it, that's where your races ran. Everything else was hay. So there's right now, like Mike said, the two city councils came together with the association to do a business plan. And this was basically kind of driven because the association is ran by volunteers. That entire farm out there is managed by volunteers. And this two cities provide $10,000 each year for to facilitate a 450-acre piece of land. So they there's pressure for these for the association to make it more sustainable. So this business plan is going to be great because it's going to help the two cities understand what kind of cost that farm would actually cost the city if we were if we didn't have this volunteer group. But it will also kind of help the association look at sustainable ways to create income that will help, you know, whether it's, you know, like one simple amenity would be adding a kitchen to the Meadowbrook Farm facility, which would allow larger weddings. So things like that. So more to come. Like Mike said, the parks element will be, it's with the Parks Commission right now, and it's going to be coming to you in the next month and a half. It's not necessarily one of our core, that one was updated more recently than the other. So the higher priorities to get our comprehensive plan updated by this deadline we need to, which has already passed, but we're okay with that.
We plan for our new deadline.
But anyway, we're going to be bringing that chapter to you next. After you, so we have three left, these two and that one. And that will be a great place to kind of add some policies if you have some thoughts on the, you know, on the food aspect or the farming aspect.
And likewise for Colgate Farm, might be another great opportunity.
Yeah, that's the place to do it, yeah.
Isn't there, were we talking with somebody to lease that land, Farm Bureau, or somebody from Seattle?
We were talking to KCD for a while. We were kind of hoping we could locate KCD's kind of headquarters here because we thought it would be a great fit. Mm-hmm. And Dick's on the board, so he'd be able to speak to maybe not. I don't know where they are, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Or at least I understand it's on hold.
But the city's in support of it. I mean, I think it would be a great fit for the city. Yeah. So, fingers crossed.
So just close the business on Bates.
Yeah.
Hops.
Yeah. Lots of hops. Is there American hops?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a ship stuff in Europe.
It's a commodity almost. I think there's a hop shortage. So there's actually
sure there's a hop shortage.
Pay shortage too.
I think it'd be helpful to have hops.
Let's go back to that whole ship of mock. There's some meat right there with
okay, moving on.
I have a question direct to Mark on roads. Help me understand the process that's going on right now on 14th, near the Encompass building. You're taking out the cottonwoods, but you're not going to resurface until next year. Is that a budget issue or is there a structural issue there?
It's a budget issue this year. We didn't think we were going to remove those six trees until the same time as the project was going to happen, but cottonwoods are really, I mean, they're huge trees, they're extremely heavy. They'll break off limbs, because they hold so much water, they'll break off limbs on a summer day. You know, most trees, you're not out on windy days because the tough furs, everything's coming off, so you know not to be outside, but the cottonwoods are different. And we just, the mayor and myself and Londi, we just got just concerned about these trees and how many children are there. So we said, hey, we're taking them out. We got a good bid on it. The actual pavement, we can't just do an overlay on that road. It's in such bad shape. There's no storm drench collection conveyance. The low point of the road is in the middle of the road, which is the worst kind of road you can have, because then you get the freeze thaws, which break up the pavement, and that's been happening for decades and decades. And Chinook Lumber pounds those roads with heavily loaded trucks, and there's a welding shop. And so I moved that up, and I got City Council's blessing from road repair, which was a number 17 or 19 priority in our 2015 through 2020 six-year TIP. In our 2016 through 2021 TIP, it's a number 5 project. So maybe not next year, but certainly in 2017, we'll reconstruct
that road. That road already is a mess. It's not drivable.
It's
I haven't been out there in the last couple of days, so you're saying...
I was there yesterday. I was there this morning.
Yeah. It's terrible. I agree. The only good thing is it provides traffic calming. It's so dirty. If I can find a silver lining. But, you know...
You don't need speed limits.
It's bad. And I can always say, hey, City Council, this is so dangerous. I need emergency repair dollars. Let's get this. Because I have a survey of it, but I do need a design, and then I need to go out to bid. So it's possible we could do that this year if a poor City Council member says, gosh darn it, Mark, we're tired of this road. Go fix it.
Gosh darn it, Mark.
Yeah.
And gosh darn it, Mark, I'm tired of that road.
But it's $400,000 to fix. So,
yeah. Well, when you slow down the speed limit out of here, you might start diverting the traffic.
But you've got a metro line going across that surface. Yeah. The school buses go across that surface.
Which is fun.
Parents bringing in their kids. It's going to be mentioned around the town, that road's...
Oh, it's terrible. So that's why I moved it up so high. And if, like I said, if City Council said make this happen, pull it out of the general fund. Nothing's free, so we've got to pull that money from... And we can't use transportation impact fees for pavement repairs, so we can't charge the pull the developer's money, pay for it. So it's got to come out of general fund or REIT, real estate excess tax, or another, you know, tax.
And it's not the only bad road. There's other bad roads.
There's other ones.
In the old town area, between QFC and Ballarat, I guess, there's two or three roads that are basically running dirt surfaces. They're so thin.
Well, the cool thing is if you email out your tip map, then we can start putting comments on that. Mm-hmm. These highlighted areas bring to your attention.
Yeah.
What is your biggest barrier to getting a lot of these projects done? I think I know this, but when I looked at that plan, there's some that have been on there for the previous 7 years.
So I'd say right now, you might not like hearing this, but it might be staff. So much of my staff is focused right now on private development that's happening in the review of these plats. Because we've got all this new infrastructure that's coming. You haven't seen it yet, but it's happening. It's on plans everywhere. And this town's going to look totally different in 2 or 3 years. And so that's taking a lot of my resources away. Like Brian doesn't do any of ongoing maintenance or capital projects. So if we had a capital projects manager to manage the consultants. And so I've attempted... You know, I got two new positions created from City Council last year. I may talk to them in September, say, hey, I need a capital projects manager so that we can manage these projects, so we can fit them in. Because most cities, you know, our size do not have 900 homes going through the pipeline that much, and North Bend's really changing, and so we're busy over public works. And these capital projects are cradle to graves. You got to do the survey, utility locates, coordinate with the neighbors, you got to get the design, and you advertise, and you get bids, and then you construct, and sometimes there's grants involved, and it's, you know, you can't do everything currently, you have to do it all sequentially, and you need experienced people who know what they're doing to manage the contractors and consultants so the job gets done on time, on budget, and so.
Those are good problems to have a booming situation.
Yeah, it makes my job challenging, and it's never boring, that's for sure. Yeah, lots of stuff going on, so.
Well, thank you for that. We definitely appreciate all the effort, but it's helpful to have an understanding besides budget what else goes on.
And you must like this, you're sticking.
Well, I've been in the industry for 20 years, so.
From Newcastle, this is a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Yeah, people are tougher out here. So it's a different town for sure. Yeah.
Hi, Ernie.
Different challenges.
All right. Police. Anything? Any comments?
No. Our contract's up. The police, you said?
Yes.
What's our contract up?
2018.
2 more years, I
think. 2018.
Was it a 5-year? I thought it was a 3-year contract.
I thought it was a 3-year.
It's in here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be 2018.
I thought it was 19.
Or 2017.
2019.
Yeah, 2019. I think it got extended when they, did they extend it when they added the 8th officer? We'll check that number. Mondi actually, she wrote that section, so it's probably correct.
What do you think of being a substation out here?
Well, that was going to be part of the Civic Center. So the Civic Center, the idea we were looking at is buy out some of the buildings that are in need of repair. But City Hall on the second story, live performing arts first floor, and then potentially a small police substation, including to be included maybe facing Main. But like I said, right now that's on hold for a couple months, so more to come on that in the future. But that's when we were kind of thinking of it. You know, we do have them kind of in City Hall right now. They kind of use the upper floor of the fire station. But it's not really a public space. So, but that was our goal, to have it with our Civic Center or City Hall.
The new fire station or the old fire station?
Our old one.
Is that bigger?
Yeah. But the goal is to have it in our new Civic Center or City Hall.
Why have that kind of need right in the area that you're trying to revitalize downtown, have a police presence like that?
Well, it would be, all the government portion of it would be
in the Civic Center.
Yeah, on the second story predominantly, but we do want to have a lobby, ADA accessible area for anybody to come in, and that's where we thought we'd be nice to have a
central
small
location, right?
Yeah,
right.
A small, yeah.
Like, I just visualize people coming to handcuff.
No, it's not that. This is where we're the community activities where people can come in.
Well, I say a substation, I mean a substation where.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So,
no.
You're going to have.
So, quality doesn't even happen.
We're not doing that, yeah.
They don't even take them there. They go to Issaquah in Seattle.
Yeah, we wouldn't put that cost into it with Snoqualmie right where they are located.
You see, Redmond has two holding sites.
Yeah, I mean, how many people are we arresting now?
Right.
How many are we prosecuting? That was even the difference between arson.
The numbers are there. It's, yeah.
I always worry about the arrest record
right.
High, prosecution record low. Coming from Arizona, specifically Sheriff Joe, there's a lot of history. Yeah. Political swing.
Arrest them
records.
All and think about it.
Yeah.
Put them in the pink jumpsuits.
Political
swing.
Sorry,
that's a good point, actually.
Yeah, well, you're here
to you have lots of people to do your work.
Exactly.
You can fill potholes.
Should we write that in there? We hereby require fire protection. We have a nice new fire station, has capacity for build out.
In pretty good shape there.
Has that fire station actually maybe accomplished some great? I noticed that we have a safe place for drop-off babies. Has that been used?
I have not heard if that's ever been used. I know we have that, though. You're right. No questions asked.
And we have it, and it seems like it's awkward to use.
Okay.
I thought to myself, how would I get in? You have to actually gain access before we can even get in there. And if I'm in a situation where I'm going to leave a baby who needs to be found immediately, it doesn't seem to be set up for that.
Well, there is a doorbell, so they're always out there at the station. So.
Yeah, but that makes the person not anonymous. I mean, one experience I had was dealing with the Encompass guys, but it just seems like that a parent who was leaving a baby off wants to be anonymous, wants to leave the baby in a safe place and move on.
You can bring that up.
Having been ring a doorbell confronts them with the staff. That just seems to be a call.
Commissioner Ryan, I don't think it's this station. I've been to a couple fire stations where they have that policy to sign up where you're supposed to leave the baby with someone, not at the door. And so, yes, that is the barrier that you're talking about, but I don't think it's one. I think it's their policy or the way that they handle it.
Yeah.
We can mention it to them and see what and get a little more information and bring it back to you. What they actually.
Just being the word here, I don't know if people recognize that or not. They feel the system is policy is fine, but I'm wondering if it's working. That's why I'm asking the question. Do we have a record of babies being left there?
will ask.
Signage is an exception, too. If the signage isn't there, it's not something that you're necessarily going to know that application is available.
The whole facility is not set up for that. How are you going to get there without walking out or driving out and you're in the middle of every
night? There's cameras.
To your point, I agree.
The Carnation station, right as you come into Carnation, has it pretty clearly labeled.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's not labeled. It's clearly labeled in the fire station as well, but it's not an anonymous opportunity. It's clearly up. You can ring a bell and get it opened up. So nice to come see that.
And you have to know that it's there.
Yeah.
And not be ready for it.
Okay. Public schools. Anybody? Comments?
The fire station. I think couldn't have been a better location for our town the way it's going to be built out. I think point to point is probably the most optimal spot for the future growth. Even I'm talking about as East Rock Bend gets built out, it's still the best spot. You wouldn't have to move. If you want to add a station further on down the line, that's a heck of a spot.
Public schools, some good information, but
they set their own level of service, and we partner. Yeah.
So is that just in there because it's in the GMA?
Yeah. 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 It's part of the information. So we're part of having.
Again, just want to reference out as much as possible to other plans that address it.
Yeah.
Did this little chart where they indicate class size, that came from them, I assume?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who came up with the phrase average target class size.
That's theirs.
Oh, you get into that all that verbiage, it's pretty ridiculous. And the amount of time, student days.
Yeah. Maybe I'll be there today.
My wife is a teacher. It's pretty infuriating when you look at that and how it gets played to the benefit of not the teacher but the students.
So I want to be respectful of your time. We've passed our 9 stop time, and don't know if you have any more questions for Mark or the staff, or if you have any other changes or requests for staff that you want to see next time.
Do we deal with libraries in this discussion, or is that strictly a county issue?
It's not something the city addresses.
They just want to have space when they want it. Is there a possibility the county may want a library out in the east end?
It's possible, but that would be the county's levels of service and their operations. It's not something that the city would influence.
Do we have to plan for it, though, plan for a space?
We don't have to plan for a space. They would, if they chose to locate another small library, they would contact us and then start working with us to find a location.
I'd be surprised.
Based on our population, they're not going to do that.
We jumped past water.
We what?
We jumped past water and went to sewer.
We did talk water.
I blinked and I missed it. But my question was, I remember listening to an article, or reading an article in the news, and we're like the polar opposite of Detroit, but talking about people in Detroit, and they're having their water shut off. I come from the belief that water is a basic human right, and while this is a service provided by the city, I understand if people don't pay for that service, your service gets cut off. And I'm wondering if this is the forum or this is the document to have some type of prevention for that so that somebody can continue. If that's what we would recommend and that's what we want for our city, but despite their inability to pay for water, that they get it provided nonetheless.
What I would recommend there, this is probably not the document to put that in, because that's more of a policy of how we deal with people that are delinquent in their payment, that can pay and just are choosing to deal with
that.
Life differently. So, versus somebody truly in need. So, what I would say, let me talk to our utility people. And I know that there's a process to...
Yeah, there's like three or four letters that
yeah.
Yeah, it takes a while. It's not instantaneous where you shut off the water. It's 9 months or something.
Yeah, and there's a process if somebody's in a hardship and they, you know, there's so let me get a little more info back on that, on what their actual steps are in the event somebody really is in need.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So for planning perspective, I'd kind of like to know if we don't do a sewer deal with Snoqualmie, where would you like a facility to be sited so we can try and, you know, plan for that? Or at what elevation should a pond be to allow sufficient drainage into the aquifer? So in other words, you don't want to be 35 feet above, but is 400 enough, or do you have to be 800 feet above?
So, and I haven't really looked at what sites would be a good one if we were to expand. You know, it should be on the low point of town, because otherwise you got to pump everything up. So, and we've got natural barriers with the rivers too. So, right now, none of our sewer mains cross the river except for one, which is under State Route 202. But that's a pretty small line. It's a pretty small lift station there. I'm just not sure at this point where we would place that facility. As you cross the river, it's just you're more in the floodplain for siting a new facility. So
I don't think there's anything at this point that we could put into our plan because there's now unknowns in further study.
Yeah, I think, Gary, what might be helpful for this document is because there's a sewer comprehensive plan that we have which actually would dial in on opportunity size, best location, you know, you need proximity to river, potentially. So maybe think more globally on the realm of the goals you want to achieve with your wastewater and how we treat that. So if it's, you know, if you're focusing on the environmental aspect or what have you, and then put the general goals that will drive some of the discussion when we dial in on the sewer comp plan. That would probably be the most helpful for this.
Our last sewer comp plan is dated 2001, so it's pretty old. It's, and a
it's
lot of it's based on vacuum systems, and it's like, okay, about 10% of this is good. So one of the reasons we need a new one.
I'm not jumping into it.
I mean, maybe there's some options out here Northeast 12th Street for a new treatment plant. We've talked about, instead of discharging into the South Fork, discharging into the Middle Fork because it's a much bigger river. It's got way more flow, so for the temperature, for total suspended solids and VOD, that river can handle it a lot better than South Fork Snoqualmie River, which is a stream in the summer.
And it's already polluted by some failing septics. Sorry.
Well, I don't know the details.
So, according to the Department of Ecology.
They didn't get a herd of elk that went across the stream right before they went out to beer.
According to Department of Fish and Wildlife, they said it wasn't elk.
Yeah.
And they said they could tell.
Yeah.
Did you get identified with physical contamination using genetics? I'm sure they were right on that.
Yes. Because their plan was to have elk migrate in the river corridors, and so my question was, then the waste will pollute the water.
Yeah, it's so much easier to do that on a lake than it is a river, because I've done that on the lake. After people that have failing septic systems, you can see where the effluent, the high E. coli numbers are hit. Mm-hmm. A river, good luck. I mean, yeah, it could be leaching right under some rocks, and it's already the E. coli is already 50 feet downstream by the time you come. It's much harder to test. Yeah.
But I think that's also why our goal is to solve the problem.
Yeah, get sewer.
Get sewer to Silver Creek and get those people off.
Awesome. I'm just thinking, I'm trying to find niches where you put a sewer treatment plant. I realize that is such a difficult thing that just we're overthinking the problem because obviously the best solution is to hook up the sewer quality in terms of engineering and all that because no matter where you look, to site a new facility is going to be in an inappropriate location. My thoughts are forcing me over to Moon Valley Road in that area. I think there might be elevated locations out there, but I realize that there aren't. The fact that we've been thinking about Moon Valley Road makes me feel like I'm crazy.
Yeah, I've
Yeah, I know we have a water source out there, right?
That's where Mountainside Springs is out there, towards the North Fork. And that's where close to where you have the three rivers, where the confluence is out there.
Yeah.
It's real low, and that's where the flooding, you know, happens.
So there's a little bit of site at the base of Sai. But the location we have that we can annex it into the city to use it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough problem.
It's kind of deal with Cabin and Grouse Ridge.
Yeah. Very familiar with
the other
area
way
out there. And there, I can't think of an area that would be big enough that would not have serious either floodway or really low areas of floodplain.
Some of the HDR zone, that's a 20-acre lot.
Well, we have a consultant firm that's going to help with this decision-making
process,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe what the concern here is that we need to include something in this document to revisit once all those data are reviewed and there's a proposal afoot. I mean, is that what the concern is? Because everybody's guessing on where we should put a new sewer plant, but we just don't have all the insights yet.
No, so. I think I have a policy that I could write that I think I would need to revisit it, but.
Because otherwise, I mean, let's just wait till.
Yeah, it's going to be the consultants and telling us what they think. Here's the most cost effective. Do you agree, Mark? Mayor, do you agree? Council?
Exactly. It'll be consultants, city, and ecology.
Right.
And ecology.
Yeah, ecology is going to get that one.
Exactly.
But remember, you know, we can keep you up to speed as the year goes on. And then once our consultants give us all the information, our sewer pump plan is going to be updated. By then, we're probably going to be turning back to this in the next 4 years. You know, that's about the time frame this is all going to come down. So we'll keep you up to speed.
You know, this might be
Dick.
Compared.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I know why I'm feeling a little uncomfortable why we should look at this quality. It goes back to when the Compass was trying to find a location to get out of the floodplain by Epsilon. And we looked at the elevated site on Hospital Hill, right behind the hospital. And what we were offered at that time was a 99-year lease to build. Now, when we started asking investors to donate for a building on a site we didn't own, they started drying up. They wouldn't. If I think about investors being citizens, citizens are paying their taxes to live where they're living. They want to feel that the city government is in control of their facilities. It makes me nervous to think that we are dependent upon Snoqualmie for this very vital service.
That's why I think it would be a new district would be created.
And that's why there would be a city commission from people from North Bend, people from Snoqualmie, because there would be far more than an interlocal agreement. It's a whole new thing.
You can guarantee, I mean, we can guarantee that right now, we're not looking at just giving away the farm. We would stay somehow in control of our citizens and what their desires and say is, whether that's a new district or some other form of organization. But right now, it's so preliminary that it's just not yet. But that is actually a very good point.
And that speaks to the other option, which is let's just pay Snoqualmie to treat our sewer and put in some pump stations to get it there, right? Then I think that one would be voted off the table right away. I don't know anybody that want that actual fee potentially go up anytime.
Kind of go sideways because this isn't specific to our infrastructure except the fact it's going to run through the middle of town. The South Fork Corridor project and the impact of the potential of a dike and a new system going in. I know that I haven't heard that they've scheduled the meeting for that yet. I think they're still getting everything together. But as we're thinking about that, there is an impact.
So that's a transportation project over here. I think it's South Fork Avenue Extension. Is that the transportation
the
project?
South Fork, the
setback levy?
Setback levies.
Oh, yeah, that's a King County driven project, yeah.
And that's why it's not specific to us, but it is an infrastructure project that has a direct impact on the city.
And we're watching that one. I mean, right now, the setback levy affects about 10 to 12 parcels down by where the river and I-90 kind of comes. That's the county's kind of like vision. And then as it comes into North Bend, where it affects North Bend is on the Nintendo site, where if the county does pursue a setback levy, we're pushing to couple it with the connector road across Nintendo. So we're watching and we're staying involved in.
If that setback levy changes, we're going to go to FEMA and say, okay, we've got all this more storage for this point of the river, and we're also, King County and I, we're putting pressure on WashDOT. This may not happen for 5, 10, 15 years. I don't know. Increase the span length of the South Fork Bridge. So if you ever walk down the river, South Fork, you'll see the levees are 300 feet apart, and then as you get right to Bendigo, they're like all 700 feet. Well, that is an hourglass that backs up the water and floods North Bend. So King County at WashDOT, and they thought they were really smart doing this in the 70s, because like, oh, we're going to shrink down the levees and have a lot less steel and a lot less concrete for a cheaper bridge, but they didn't realize that it actually the water's going to back up, and so the floodplain keeps getting more impactful in North Bend, and so hopefully we can get a bridge that's four lanes across there in a much longer span, so it allows the river to flow through faster. But with the setback levy, it creates a lot more open area for basically water retention in the river. And then we can hopefully have a smaller floodplain impact on the city.
Which helps us with what we're trying to do in the downtown. Yeah.
So we're totally informed and just kind of watching what the county's doing with that section down below. Because that's their
highest
priority.
They're worried about that piece. So they're kind of doing their thing.
Yeah.
And how is it? Because it does have an impact.
Yeah.
That's going to kick in. Yeah. Because that's kind of the definition of infrastructure.
Right. And if they move forward with their higher priority, which is the one at the by I-90, you know, but right now they're getting the word out.
All right. So does anybody have anything specific on the policies that they'd like to propose at this time, or do you want to resume at the next meeting?
And remember, this was the intro. We're going to do a public hearing next meeting. So,
carry on.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark, for being here.
Yeah. Now, are you guys okay? I mean, is there any reason you're going to need Mark next time? And, otherwise, you guys got all your questions? Okay, great.
We can email.
Can't we just Skype from the kitchen table? We call you in.
There you go.
I trust them.
They'll do a great job.
We can telecommute this meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
That's next month in the budget.
Yeah.
All right. Before we adjourn, anything for the good of the order?
I have one item.
Yes, sir.
I brought it up in the past and nobody else has, and maybe I should stop after this. But it occurs to me often as we approach the hour, or half an hour from 10 o'clock, that folks who come to these meetings, sometimes they do come. They usually come because there's something on the agenda that they'd like to address, either pay attention to or add to. And when our clock starts at 7 and doesn't end, they really don't know when they should show up or when they should reserve time in their day. So I'd love it if there was a way that whoever creates our agenda could start at 7 and end at 9 and have incremental time hacks that if we as a group run into, we have a timekeeper. It says, hey, we need to buy time. Even if it's 9 o'clock, we can decide as a group to run out to 10. But I think that would help us all, and certainly the public who choose to come, know what we're doing and when we're doing it. So without an objection, I'll propose that we have that on our future agendas.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Go to the order. I'll take one. I'd like to revisit a new schedule so we can take a look at what's left of our comp plan and also a few things that we want to schedule, like the transportation plan and whatever else is coming up next. I can come in next week in the morning if you want to talk about that.
Okay.
In the past, we've taken off a day in August for vacation. And so I don't know if that is something we can handle in our schedule, but I think the commission would all appreciate it.
Right. Well, we've talked to, we're okay even though the deadline was June. We would like, though, to have these two, it would be ideal to have these two elements out by August, and our thought was another July hopefully you guys get the economic development chapter pretty much wrapped up then, and then the capital facilities in August, one meeting in August. That means pretty much the whole comp plan is on the way to council. We have parks element that would start in September or be introduced in August and approved in September. I mean, ideally my goal is to have the council approve it all by October. So that gives council a short time frame, but land use chapter was, I think, the big one for them. So we'll see.
Okay. And if you hadn't heard, they had considered the land use element at their last work study. And the only change that they were considering, it hasn't been acted on yet, but from the Planning Commission recommendation, was the high density residential from cottage residential. So they weren't comfortable with that. But other than that, it looks like they were ready to accept all the other Planning Commission recommendations on those other issues.
All right. The last thing I have is at the Carnation 4th of July parade, one of my sons was at once wanted to be a paramedic, the other one a fireman, so we always go to fire stations. I happened to get a chance to talk to the regional commander for Eastside Fire and Rescue. One of the questions I asked him, I said, I always know that the underbrush of our forest is always too wet to burn, Salal doesn't burn. He said, this year, it's dry enough. Just FYI. So, yes, not watering your lawns, but defensible spaces by mulch, whatever you want to read about and figure out for your homes, be safe.
Yeah, let me echo that. At our Green Forest Commission today, we had an emphasis on how dry it is. Firewise suggests we prune 10 feet up, 30 feet out. Try to get 15 trees, get the limbs 10 feet up, 30 feet away from where it rests on all sides. So that would be one initial step we can all do to protect our homes. If that's all you do, that'd be good.
Well, I wonder if, on that point, because I feel and share that sentiment, because I'm worried about that too, because we do have a lot of stuff that's drying out. I'm wondering if maybe there's something that we can just do as a sidebar comment, friendly comment to the council, to actually think about some sort of community movement on that, as far as maybe some awareness, some encouragement of it, maybe even dumping or, you know, providing some, I mean, we do it for hazardous waste, we do it for other things. Maybe it's something that we should take into consideration for this past city.
Brendan, what about if, would it be in line with what you're saying to potentially have the fire chief come to a council meeting and talk about?
Absolutely.
Maybe I'll ask him if he could do that.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Okay.
Because it's a serious threat, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And thankfully, we have new sewer and water pump lines to get that pressure. But
we don't use a sewer, maybe the water lines.
Well, maybe desperate. Maybe desperate. That's one way to get rid of that fluence, right? But no, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, I'm going to make myself a note not to forget to ask.
I think on the city's website, and even on their rolling TV spots, they should have something in there talking about Firewise and weather.
I don't know if that's something
we can bring up tomorrow.
That actually is a pretty good site. If you're just what's going on around the city, just tune into that for an hour, you get a lot of information.
Yeah. Say the name again.
It's the
radio site or website?
It's the TV website for
sure.
Then Channel 21.
Yep.
It recycles about every hour. That same information, but that's good way to get stuff out.
Yep.
Anything else for good of the order?
It is harder for me to get up to speed. Where do I find some of these chapters?
I'm going to talk to you about that. We have a booklet for you, and it has basically everything that you're going to need. Lynn can work on it. So, yeah, I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Okay.
We can figure out a time you can come in. We can sit down. And talk.
All right. With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Oh.
Second. Moved by Mr. Lucky, seconded by Mr. Elwood. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
We are adjourned at 9:38.
And if everyone can promise to be done by this time, at the next meeting, we could actually be here. We just have to be at CTAC by 10:30. So.
Yes. Our goal is to be done by 9.
And it'll be on the agenda next time.
If not, I might have to leave, but I can try to be there. It's a little bit later by then. Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Mark. I love you. Always nice to hear from the source.
Did you ever find what the source of the BOD was you were speaking of? That was whatever was causing the issue?
We had, we had some hits a few months ago, early Saturday mornings, of IBODs, and we were never able to track that down, what that source was.
Yeah,
was
kind of, do you know some like what causes it?
It could be industrial type use. Manufacturing use.
No.
We're just totally baffled. Because every other month has been just actually standby. It was just like one hit for a week.
Oh, nice. Yeah, press get.
Hasn't been a consistent problem. I mean, some cities that you can treat, you can basically run your meters upstream in the sewer system and eventually find where that source is. But you started talking about maybe, CSI sewer. But no, we never had to do it. So
it's a stiffer stake.
I would not want that job.
Yeah, dirty jobs are ready.
All right. Anybody for the bar and grill? I'm going to cool off with some.
What defined us as a town is we have.
Go for the libation dance.
All right.
But then Gilbert just got too big and powerful and incorporated us.
Well, Mike, that was a team effort. That was a team effort. You weren't on the hot point today like some other meetings.
Ooh, it's warm in here, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. I used up all my short sleeve shirts on vacation, so they're all
blooping. I know, I've been living in the
north. It's so hot, it's like that, but I run your condition
2 years. We went to see if it was going to be over 100 that day. Plus, I got a movie theater
to watch. There you go.
The grill's gone. The sun was 5-7. It's even hot in the shade. Yeah. I'm not walking anymore. I don't do well above 80.
I'm at my dad's getting married tomorrow. Eastern Washington in Prosser, outdoor. It's going to be hot.
Yeah. Did you have a Bermuda wedding? Jacket, tie, and shorts.
There you go. Or it's casual. Oh, thank you. Yeah.
See, I asked my question off the recording about the BOD level because I think